did you hear that mild shot that Steve Grzanich took at the Chicago White Sox, Wendy?
No, I didn't.
He said the White Sox are playing, I guess.
Steve, like, you have to go through the spanking machine now.
I think that's why he did it.
I'm ready to go.
I'm pretty sure that was all calculated so that he would get a trip through the spanking machine. What room is that in, by the way?
Club 720.
Should I wear pants or no?
No, that's up to you. That's totally up to you.
I have to think about that one.
You don't want to think about that. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Thrilled to be here for you. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200.
Welcome back, my
Thank
friend.
Thank you. You're nice to be back.
You look tan, you look refreshed, and you look like you ate a lot of lobster.
I'm all those things. I told you this already. We went to Maine. My family and I went to Maine. Well, just my wife and I. My daughters weren't
Your
there now that I think about it.
Before the daughters came.
Right. Version one of my family, just Terry and I, we went to Maine for 4 days. And of the 8 meals that I consumed there, 4 lunches and 4 dinners, 7 of them were lobster-based.
No breakfast? You didn't do lobster omelets?
No lobster omelets for me. I don't like breakfast weighs me down, you know. So just lunch and dinner. But people always think, well, why would anyone have that much lobster? But when you're there,
why wouldn't you?
It makes perfect sense.
Can't get enough lobster.
Oh, it's so good.
Is it cheaper there?
Nope.
All right, that I don't understand.
It's more expensive there. You know, there's a lobster truck that you and I both frequent, and we love it very much. Happy Lobster. And once a week, when the truck is nearby, you and I have a lobster roll, and we enjoy it. And it's $17, and you think to yourself, oh, that's a kind of a lot of money for lobster. But it's not, because right there in the heart of Maine, it's $20 and up for a lobster roll.
And they get it right out
there.
Of the water. They just reach in.
The lobster sometimes... You see them lining up from the ocean to the lobster stand. They volunteer.
Suicidal ones.
Yeah, that's kind of sad, but yeah.
I don't care if they give their life for us.
Because it's so delicious. Now, here's what I wanted to point out to you, and I've told you this before, and I don't understand it, and now that I've just seen it for the last 4 or 5 days, I understand it even less. I usually see this phenomena in Disney World, but I rarely see it in Maine, but I saw this several times in Maine. And that is groups of people, normally a family, but not always a family, who are on vacation and have decided to all wear the exact same outfit.
That goes back probably, how old am I? 21.
You're 21 now.
That goes back. There are some old Snyder family videos.
Your family did this?
Matching gym shoes. They were all red kids with white little anklet socks.
How was that sold to the family?
I don't know, Bill. I was a toddler, maybe 5 years old.
Yeah.
I had nothing to do with it. At that point, you just put on what your mom gives you.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just laugh at it. Because I would have rebelled.
That's what I kept thinking. All right. I'll give you a couple examples. There were a couple of groups of people... that wore all the same outfit that I could tell were not a family, or if they were, it was a larger extended family, but it was like a group. So like one of them, they all had these sky blue shirts on with an outline of the state of Maine, and it said the Maine event, and it was spelled like the state Maine, M-A-I-N-E. So they were all together. There were like 14 of them, the Maine event, and they were just taking pictures and stuff. So I go, okay, that's some group. And
family
I guess
reunion,
to
maybe.
Yeah, maybe. All right. Then there was another group of people, and they were all dressed the same, and their shirt said what did it say? Oh, it was a lobster smoking a cigar, and it had a machine gun, and it was the Lobster Mobsters, and they were older people. And
that's a high school reunion, maybe.
I don't know what it was, but even then I went, okay, maybe it's part of the package. They said, we're going to throw in, you get a token for the bus to drive you to and from. And you get a lobster shirt and a lobster roll. And so maybe that was part of it. But the most alarming one was Terry and I saw a family of four, a husband, wife, son, and daughter. And then the son was dressed just like the dad, and the daughter was dressed just like the mom. It was like a checkerboard. The guys wore blue checkerboard shirts and khaki pants, and then the girls wore checkerboard pink with khaki pants.
How old were these kids?
The girl was about 9, maybe 10. The boy was about 3, maybe 4. But I said to Terry, like, that would be such a deal breaker for me that I would have rather just said to my family, I know I'm only 4. You guys go and have a good time, and I'll just stay in the room because I don't want anyone to ever see me. I don't want any pictures of this. I don't want any evidence that I ever gave in to this. Cause it just,
at 4, you would have said that?
I would have said it at any stage of my life, from the time I was first conceived till today, I would have said, I'll never speak to you guys again if you make me do this. I'm out. I can't do it.
I see it a lot for reunions, like they have shirts printed up to celebrate the big thing. And that's, again, who cares what somebody else does? I don't know that I'd do it. The matchy-matchy things like that, maybe it's to, since it was like a blue, a checkerboard thing, maybe it was to keep track of everybody.
There's only four of them.
I guess.
Like if there was a, like, that's why I'm giving way to the larger groups, because I go, okay, there's almost 20 people there. But even if one's straight off, what's going to, so then when you're filling out the police report, you can go, it's an old guy wearing a Lobster Mobster t-shirt. Not hard to find because the rest of us are here. He's the missing one. Find him.
It would be easier to find him with some shirt like that.
But are they anticipating that somebody in the group will be missing? Is
maybe
that why
there's one they don't like. They hope he, you know, he strays off a little bit.
Maybe.
But fingers crossed.
I know, that's the reason for it. But I just, like, if my dad would have tried to have sold that to the rest of us when I was a kid, we would have laughed so hard.
I think it's the mom that does it, don't you?
Is it the mom?
I don't know. I don't know why we all had red gym shoes on, but it was pretty funny. And I'm sure my brother hated the fact, but you go along with
it. Did you wear them at any other point other than on that family trip?
I have no idea. I just only know from seeing videos I was really young, and it looked really stupid.
Of course it does. Of course it does.
I don't know if our phones are working today.
Oh, that's fine.
Hey, Karen.
Hey, yeah, I just heard a bizarro phone thing, so I'm not sure if they are either. But anyway, my husband and I and our granddaughter just came back yesterday from a cruise. It was wonderful. No, we didn't dress alike. We were on the Escape, Norwegian's Escape, the largest of large ships, and 4,200 people.
Wow.
How does that thing stay afloat? Could someone explain that? That thing is heavy.
Very buoyant.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And 20 stories. And I have to tell you, it has the deluxe water park. I digress for a minute. It has ropes course. It has zip line.
Wow.
You name it. It is just absolutely tremendous. And my husband and I, we're older. We like the big ships. You know, it's a lot of action. But to get to your topic, yes, there were families that were dressed like Dominic's 10th birthday. And you'd see 12 people all dressed with yellow, you know, and white, either white pants, you know, or capris or shorts. And they'd pose for the photo op. Then later on, less and less of Dominic's 10th birthday people, you know. And so you kind of wondered, oh, did they not bring enough shirts? And they're still wearing that shirt again, you know.
Right.
And there was, of course, Grandma and Grandpa's 60th anniversary and, you know, stuff like that. And they would pose for the photos, but you saw them less and less. What I did see is quite a few sets of twins. And twins dressed alike.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know. That's scary because I think you have twins.
I do have twins. But we, from the minute we found out we were having twins, my wife and I made a pledge that under no circumstances would we give them rhyming names or would we make them dress alike.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you. But I think in this case, they could identify them fast.
Yeah.
It's necessary.
I guess
oh,
that's the plus.
Who cares what somebody else's family's doing? I think it's cute.
Oh, well, anyway, it was delightful to see. And, you know, I mean, a cruise is a happy time. Happy,
of course.
Happy.
Yeah. How much weight did you put on?
Oh, food deluxe.
Yep.
I mean, it's expandable pants. What I did learn, do not bring a lot of clothes because they have wonderful laundry service.
Oh,
you know,
that's
and
good,
so
that's a good tip.
Midweek, or you do what I do. Yeah, take your ready underwear and you throw them away.
That's a great tip.
And then you, or your ready shirts, or
Karen. Well, I think we better let you go, or you're going to continue on an embarrassing path here.
Good. It was wonderful. So we're very
welcome back. We're
Thank
glad
you,
you had
so
fun.
Much.
So if you saw a family all dressed in the checkerboard, they looked like they had escaped from a Shakey's pizza. It looked like the four people somehow found some side exit to get out of a Shakey's pizza. Guys in blue, women in pink.
Pink. But plus, I hate that. I hate the guys should have been in pink. I can't stand when people put girls in pink. I'm a girl that never really liked pink.
Yeah. It's a stereotype.
Yeah, I don't like it.
It's a color stereotype for fashion. But boy, did it seem strange.
It's a weird thing, and we will continue talking about it. 312-981-7200. Todd, real quick before break, you have a question?
Yeah, your brother, did he also wear the anklet socks?
I mentioned that in this video we all had red Keds on because Keds were very popular.
Yes.
And we had, like, anklet socks. I think his were the athletic version. Mine, of course, were lacy.
As well they should be.
Okay.
Yep, that makes it better.
He would not have played along at all.
Wow.
Thank you, Todd.
Wow.
It's, you know, the family that dresses together messes together.
Is
I
that,
don't know.
Do they say that? I've never heard that. I didn't know that. All right, your thoughts. We're at 312-981-7200. Have you and your family ever dressed the same for a vacation or even a doctor's visit? I'm just curious. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Raised in Chicago, reporting on Chicago, that's Mark Sapelsa and Micah Mater. Watch Chicago's very own Mark and Micah weeknights on WGN-TV.
Welcome back to Bill Leff. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, and you saw families dressing alike on your vacation.
Yeah, I'm used to seeing it in amusement parks like Disney World. You see a lot of this. You see families all wearing the exact same outfit. Couldn't be cuter, Wendy. That's what I say every time I say it. Those people couldn't be cuter. This time, my wife and I were in Maine, where we saw quite a few families wearing the exact same shirt and pant combination, and it made me scared.
217 says, the question is, what do you do with the matching shirts after the trip? I've got two shirts from a family Disney trip. Can I trash them now?
I think so. I think the minute the trip is over, you can burn them, can't you?
You know what's funny, though? I buy the same shorts for my husband and my youngest son. Just because they both like the same style, and they don't have a lot of variation in the different plaids.
Right.
So I put a D for Dylan on the tag of his because they're the same size, and then I say, you know, just don't wear them on the same day.
Oh, that's the way to play it.
Because it makes me uncomfortable, too. Like, I don't want somebody looking at me going, you're allowing this to happen?
Yeah.
Hi, John.
Hey, guys. How are you?
We're good.
Really good.
Good, good. So my brother and I are like 11 or 12 months apart, and we were always considered Irish twins. And as a result, my mom and dad literally dressed us alike.
Oh, no.
Almost our entire, through elementary school.
Yeah.
Because you look at our... At all the family portraits, you know, the Peter Pan portraits.
Yes.
When Peter Pan used to come and take your pictures on the piano bench.
Yeah.
And we're all in matching outfits all the way up until a cousin's wedding when we had white pants, blue T-shirts with a red collar, and I'm like, I'm done. I am not going to dress alike anymore.
So what'd you do? Rip your shirt and hope for a new one?
No, I never put it back on. So the next time we had a family event or a family picture, I said to my mom, I said, I want to wear something different. And
Bravo, you're a grown man now, John. Did she say that?
Because you know, she would always go to Venture or, one of those places. And she would just buy two of everything because it's easier. It was easier for her.
That's true.
Well, it's easier, but the price you pay is people looking at you going, "What? It's the guys from Rain Man. It's the brothers from Rain Man. Why are they dressed the same?"
It was hysterical. And I was one of four, and I have four kids of my own, and we never, ever, ever, ever dressed our kids alike. And, you know, and luckily they're all 2 years apart. So, but it was... I just, when you were talking about it, I'm like, oh my God, that is so funny in terms of memories that were coming up.
Glad you broke free, John.
All right, guys.
Take care. You remember that scene in Rain Man where Tom Cruise and Dustin Hoffman are coming down an escalator and they're both wearing the exact same suit? And it's funny because you go, well, grown men wouldn't do that, would they? But I mean... I don't remember seeing grown men do it, but I've seen so many families do it, and I don't know what you get out of it. I'm not positive what you gain.
Well, have you had a family portrait done professionally? Because they all dress you alike in that.
But isn't that up to the people
who
don't have to.
But it, you know, is a uniform look, like, you know, maybe it's a white shirt on top and blue denim on the bottom, so everyone has a variation of that.
Oh, yeah, I guess I've seen that. I'm not sure.
We've never done a family portrait.
We haven't either.
We could just, you know, do selfies.
Right.
That'll work
That's
better.
Easier. Yeah.
Did you and your wife dress alike?
No.
Because wouldn't that have been ironic?
I don't think that'll happen. But when the girls were little, for people who don't know, I do have twins. But when they were little, we had so many people say, I don't know, why wouldn't you dress them the same? You should dress them the same.
Well, they're not identical twins.
Even if they were identical, it's still...
That is just crazy because it's like something out of the Twilight Zone to me.
See the same image twice and have it be a person.
You do a double take and it's like, oh my God, there's two of them. How many more?
Well, you've seen, I think they do it in Minneapolis and St. Paul because they're the twin cities. But every year they do a big twins convention and almost all the twins revel in the fact that they don't only look alike, but they're dressed alike and they sound alike. And
that's like you're in a Twilight Zone
That is similar to a Twilight Zone episode. And then one set of twins, they always show some set of twins that has married another set of twins.
Just to keep the twin thing going, twin spins.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I never...
I don't understand that at all.
I grew up with two twins, Steve and Eric, and they never really dressed them identical. Maybe the same outfit, but totally different colors because one loved red and one loved green. So,
but even that it was the same outfit, it still says that somebody, the mother or the dad or somebody, goes, well, it would make sense we'd dress them alike. They've got similar... chromosome patterns. We should really dress them the same to keep that going.
They say, though, there's nothing like identical twins. They speak their own little language. Maybe they want to dress alike.
Yeah.
They're identical.
I guess. I would do everything in my power if I was me to not.
If there was an identical twin of you, I would move to another galaxy. That'd be too much. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. I am an identical twin, and my mom did dress us the same. And it's really ironic because eventually we are like, okay, we're tired of dressing the same. So they take us to the store. They take my sister in first. She picks her outfit. I don't get to see it. They take me in. We pick the same exact outfit.
Oh, no.
I believe that.
Wow.
It was crazy because I think we dressed the same. We ended up having the exact same taste.
Isn't that weird?
That's unusual. I would not have guessed that.
Yeah, it was very weird. And then I'm like, okay, forget it. I am going to dress as wild as possible. I don't look exactly the same anymore.
Although, wouldn't it be funny if your twin sister had the same theory and then you still had the same outfit because you were trying to outdo each other?
Right.
Well, that's it. We're not going to the same place then.
And Sandy, your sister's name isn't like Candy or anything like that, is it?
It's Sandy and Cindy.
Oh, all right. So almost the same.
And then she wouldn't spell Cindy with an S because then it would spell Sin, S-I-N, and everybody would think that she was a bad girl.
Sure.
It's a crazy... But my mom didn't know she was having twins.
So she was unprepared. They didn't do ultrasounds and all that stuff,
right.
You know? It was
just
like,
surprised.
Wait, I'm not finished.
There's You're more.
Right. Wait, there's more.
Yep. How it went down, just like that. The doctor's like, this isn't right, and... He's like, oh, look, take this one. Here comes another.
Wow.
Yeah, we were A and B baby for like 2 weeks.
Yeah?
Because she had to really think about what she was going to name us.
Well, I love that story. Thank you for sharing that, Twin Sandy. Sandy and Cindy.
Yep.
Coming up next.
Yeah, right. It's us right now, Bill and Wendy on WGN. Well,
it's Bill Left. It's Wendy Snyder. And Bill, welcome back. It's so nice to have you back.
Oh, that's nice of you. Thanks. Nice to be back.
I have to tell you, I had to work so hard when you weren't here.
Yeah,
it's so much easier on me when you're
good.
Here. We appreciate that. All right. We have a very important guest in the studio. His name is Robert Renteria, and he's going to tell us a little about his whole Barrio Project, the Barrio Project. From the barrio.com is his website. Robert, welcome, and thank you for coming by.
Thank you. Good morning.
A little background on yourself. You were born in East L.A.
Yes.
And you didn't have a very happy upbringing or a lot of money, did you?
Well, we grew up pretty poor. And my father was a heroin addict, and he left the family when we were just 3 years old. Ugh. And the only legacy he left us was a pile of bills, a bunch of empty bottles of booze in the trash can. But my mother was strong. She persevered, working two and three jobs to make sure my sister and I did not become part of a system.
Yeah.
And then when I was 6 years old, I had a terrible accident, almost died. I had to go to a handicap school for the physically disabled, mentally challenged. Then when I got out 3 years later, because I couldn't walk or talk or read or write at that time, my mother remarried, and she married a very abusive man. And he said, beat me to death until I was old enough to run away. Then I started running around with another dysfunctional family called gangs. And I started selling drugs and doing drugs, robbing houses, stealing cars, purses, whatever I could to survive because I was living on the street.
But weren't you drawn to the gangs because you needed a family? You needed to feel a belonging somewhere because you didn't have it in your childhood.
Well, I was looking for love, but in all the wrong places. So my
you
father
should write a song about that, Robert, because that would kill as a song.
Looking for love.
But at that point, you say to yourself, life has dealt me a horrible, horrible hand. What do I do now? And what do you do now when everything seems to be stacked against you? It just seems so desperate.
Well, as a school dropout, you know, I know I was breaking my mother's heart. And she said, please, get out of this. Get out of this. So I went back to school and got my GED, and I joined the military. And I landed up serving in the 3rd Special Forces Group at Fort Bragg. And honorably served our country for over 7 years, traveled all over the world. It was great.
Thank you for your service.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And then it was time to get out. So I went back to L.A. after 7 years. And the same guys that I knew before had elevated their game to dealing heavy drugs. Mm. Some of them were doing hard time at a federal penitentiary, doing 25 to life, being told what to do, how to walk, how to talk, when to sleep, when to eat. That's not life.
No.
And that's not why God gave you gifts when you were born. So I came to Chicago in 1990 with $200 in a duffel bag. I slept on a friend's floor in Lyle in an apartment. And all I could afford to eat back then was Arby's sandwiches 5 for $5.
And so they don't even have 5 for $5 anymore.
Mm-hmm. So you know, I drank a lot of water. I lost a lot of weight. I had to have a half a sandwich in the morning, half a sandwich at night until I got a job. But I finally got that job. And after working hard every day, every week, and every holiday, I was the guy that built all the spin cycle laundromats and bubble lands all over Chicago.
Oh, yeah?
6 years later, I became vice president of a publicly traded company on the New York Stock Exchange, and I hadn't finished high school.
Wow.
So I climbed the broken ladder of corporate America for 6 years.
Yeah.
And it was time to take the shot. And I wasn't talking about a shot of whiskey. It was take the shot and start my own business. And I started my own business, a laundry business. And after 3 years, we were the number one distribution company in the United States of America. And I thought I had everything I ever wanted. I had a nice house on a pond, 3 cars in the garage, nice jewelry, nice clothes, few bucks in the bank. And I share that with you not to impress you, but to empower you, because I learned that the two greatest days of your life are the day you're born and the day you realize why you're born.
Yeah.
And I was inspired to help a little gang guy about 11 years ago, so I wrote a book to help that kid and other kids avoid the detours I took in my life, right? It would be a roadmap to make better life choices. So the book came out in 2008, From the Barrio to the Boardroom, and I thought I was just going to have bragging rights, go back to work and just tell my friends, hey, I wrote a book. And then I get a call from Arne Duncan and the community relations people here at CPS. I thought I had done something wrong, you know, so I'm going to go see Arne Duncan. So I go see these folks, and they said, Robert, we want to teach this book to help kids avoid gangs and violence, right? And to help them with their social emotional learning skills, critical thinking skills, and life skills that they don't teach in school anymore. So a curriculum was created for the book. I paid the teachers and principals to write it. I own it, and I gift the curriculum now all over the country and around the world. We're currently in 24 different countries as of today.
Oh, my God. I have goosebumps listening to you say this now.
So what happened was, later that year, I get a call from RFB&D, Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic, because I was handicapped as a child, so they wanted to inspire other kids that are visually impaired, have reading disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So they created a CD on the Barrio book, and they launched it, and it affects 236,000 kids around the United States to inspire them that they can make it too, right? And teach them that the greater the struggle, the greater the victory. So the next year, kids are telling me they're reading the Barrio book to their parents. And I said, well, don't your parents know how to read? They said they don't read English. So we translated the book into Spanish.
Mm.
And then the churches got a hold of me. And they said, Robert, we see the kids in the hood with your book, but we can't get them to church. We want to get the kids in the church. We'll use this book as a hook to lead them to Christ so our kids, too, could see the promised land. So a faith-based curriculum was donated. Now I'm working like with international ministries and different church organizations all over the country. So I spent the first 3 years in middle schools, high schools, colleges, higher education, youth prisons, jails, social services, battered women shelters, homeless shelters, corporations like McDonald's, IBM, General Mills, General Motors, and Boeing, but I was not getting to the elementary school kids. Now, in the gang world, they grab you and they recruit you as a runner, usually. They give
very
you
young, too,
yeah,
don't
they? So they give you a few bucks, and you deliver a little baggie to Joe down the street, and you get paid. So you make a lot of money real fast as a little kid, and it's very luring and very attracting. So I wanted to be able to cut the umbilical cord to all the gang recruitment. So we went back to the drawing board and developed a graphic novel called Mi Barrio, My Barrio, or My Hood.
Mm-hmm.
And that graphic novel, Mi Barrio, was voted the best graphic novel in Latin America, Spain, and the United States of America for addressing youth issues. So now I'm helping kids, say, third grade and people older than us. And I wanted to round it off and get to the little kids, like pre-K, kindergarten, first and second grade. So we went back to the drawing board again, and with the help of some clinical psychologists and social workers in my publishing company, Roundtable Companies, we developed Little Barrio. So now we have a comprehensive, bilingual, non-generic book series and program that resonates with youth and promotes student achievement, mm-hmm. helps our kids with their critical thinking skills, and bridges the educational gap. So now that we have this program and it's helping people all over the world, I get a call from a lady named Maria Torres about a year and a half ago. Maria Torres is a choreographer for Gloria Estefan. And the call went something like this. She says, "Is this Mr. Renteria?" And I said, "Yes." And she goes, "Well, my name is Maria Torres, and I want you to know my attorney's going to call you because we're going to sue you." And I said, "Why are you going to sue me?" She said, "You stole my story. Ha, ha, ha." And she said that she loved the book. Gloria Estefan had a play last year in Chicago. And they wanted me to be their guest. Yeah. So I was their guest. And afterwards, she got together with Mary Santana and Vanessa Torres of the Miracle Center. And with the help of After School Matters, and signed off by Cook County President Tony Preuwinkle, there's a play that's going to be released now, premiered next Thursday the 11th, 12th, and 13th, called The Barrio Project. And the play is performed and produced by inner city kids here in Chicago. Oh. So now we have a play that's going to come out and reach kids all over the city of Chicago at a time that's so direly needed because of the epidemic we're faced with violence. Okay?
Absolutely. You're like a lifesaver. You're giving people hope and inspiration and dreams.
Well, you know, we have to work together. You know, we can't have another panel discussion to talk about statistics or go on another march saying we want stop the violence and we want justice and we want it now. Or looking at these parents who've lost their kids to gang violence and gun violence, standing there, you know, crying with painful tears of nobody listening to, falling upon deaf ears. So in order to be part of the solution, you got to be part of the process, and you have to give the kids something. That's why I put together the Barrio books and the curriculums, and that's why now we're working with the Miracle Center, mm-hmm. and you know, it's all done through collaboration. You know, and I am not a one-size-fits-all, so you have to know what your strengths and weaknesses are. I deal with a lot of kids who need help in substance abuse, okay, with heroin and alcohol. And that's where this great guy comes in named Tim Ryan, a man in recovery who is also the director for the Banyan Treatment Center here.
Who we have on once a month, and we met him, and you guys are now
We're now working together. Absolutely. Good. He's a great guy. I'm going to tell you, it's a great organization. And if anybody's having trouble with their kids doing substance abuse, you need to contact the Banyan Treatment Center and Tim Ryan.
It's a man in recovery, amirf.com.org, I think. It's .org.
.org.
We're going to take a quick break, and we're talking to Robert Renteria, a man who has come from nothing, and you're helping other people. I mean, do you even have time to use those three cars or your nice house?
No, I'll get to that when we come back.
All right, good. Robert Renteria, From the Barrio to the Boardroom. You can go to fromthebarrio.com to find out all the information, including the new play that is coming out starting Thursday, August 11th at the Miracle Center, 2311 North Pulaski, right here in Chicago. That's called The Barrio Project. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. We have a special guest in here today who is trying to help a lot of people out there. Robert Renteria, his website fromthebarrio.com. You have this whole The Barrio Project. I know that's the play, but what do you call the whole three-part set, the coloring book, the graphic novel, and then From the Barrio to the Boardroom? Is it the Barrio Package?
It's a trilogy of books, and they come from the Barrio Foundation. Now, my foundation, by the way, if there's any educators out there listening or program directors, we donate a free school-based and faith-based curriculum that addresses social-emotional learning. So if they contact me on email at robert@fromthebarrio.com, or they can call me directly at 312-933-5619, and we'll be happy to send it to you to help these children stay off the streets and away from gangs and violence. Because these books teach our kids that gangbang and violence is not a lifestyle but a death style, and that the ultimate weapon is not a loaded gun, but an educated mind.
But these kids that you said start so young, where they're runners, here's a couple bucks, go run this to somewhere. If they're not having money and maybe they're coming from an abusive home or a bad home like you did, why wouldn't they do it?
Well, I want to tell you that we need more role models, we need better parents, but we also need tools that are tangible and relevant to inspire and motivate these kids. So this is, even though the book has my name on it, Robert Renteria, the truth of the matter is, it's not even my story. It's their story. They're living the life today that most of us lived back then. So that's why the book resonates with these kids. The book, I got to tell you, I never saw this coming 8 years ago, 9 years ago, because I was living in a bubble. But I want to tell you that the cars that I had once had, I sold the jewelry, 401k profit share, life insurance policy. I cleaned out my bank account because I wanted to make a difference. Because I didn't want to just be some guy that had a few bucks in his pocket. And what was my legacy? What these books here represent, they're not just books with pictures and words, but a burning message of hope and dreams for generations to come and for decades to fall till the end of time. Kids will be reading the Barrio books. And for me, that gets me up every morning, fired up and ready to go.
Robert, we hear stories from underprivileged who say, I grew up in a barrio or I grew up in a ghetto and the only way out was sports, which is unrealistic because that's a numbers game. And although some kids will make it out playing sports, most will not, or selling drugs. So what do you say to those kids? What do you offer up as an alternative to say there are other paths you can follow?
Well, I'll give you an example. Okay, in the military, the problem-solving process is recognize a problem, find a solution, take action, which one of the actions I've taken with Banyan Group and Men in Recovery is for the issues with substance abuse. Now, the issues with the kids on the street now is that they can't get jobs.
Right.
So what I did was I got together recently with a group called ABC, Associated Builders and Contractors. Okay, they provide a career path to young men and women, whether they're incarcerated or have substance abuse issues or just coming out of high school, to give them a career path towards being a tradesman, like a plumber, an electrician. So, and they've got like 200 chapters nationwide, and they're looking to help inner city kids. So instead of just pointing fingers and saying somebody needs to do something about those kids, that somebody's us. That somebody's me and both of you.
Right.
So that's why I'm collaborating with other groups who want to make a difference and who are willing to help. And just somebody needs to reach out and say, hey, come over here. Because most people, if you ask them for help, their nature is they'll say, sure, what?
Right.
So most people want to help. So I'm telling the kids, ask for help, not because you're weak, but because you have to remain strong. We're looking for a hand up, not a hand out. Big difference.
It is a big difference. And you have kids that maybe they don't have a tight-knit family. Maybe they don't have someone who's saying, here are your options in life. Maybe they're just saying, you know, go to school, you're on your own. So these kids don't know where to turn. So it sounds like this being licensed to become a plumber or an electrician, it's giving them an option which they didn't have before. They had no options.
Absolutely. These kids, once they realize when they put their book smarts with their street smarts, you know what that makes them? It makes them dangerous. There's nobody stopping them. And once I found out I put my book smarts with my street smarts, there was no stopping me. And that's what I'm trying to teach these kids.
You are such an inspiration. It's called The Barrio Project, and this is a whole spinoff from all your literature. It takes place at the Miracle Center, which is 2311 North Pulaski in Chicago. The premiere is Thursday, August 11th at 6 p.m., and then there are dates on August 12th and the 13th. Now, how do we get the word out? Are there people in gangs that are going to come to this play? Do you want people in gangs to come to this play?
Well, you know, there are all kinds of people coming to this play. The Department of Corrections is an example. Juvenile Justice, okay? The Alpha Group, After School Matters, Junior Achievement, CPS, you know, business owners. And there's parents who are bringing their kids or in gangs. You can see there's another life beyond the street. So, and it's going to show them that the impossible can become possible. And that night, they're going to realize that dreams do come true and that dreams are alive and well, living today, right here and right now.
But you have to work for it.
Absolutely. No shortcuts.
Nothing comes easy.
No, you can't just put powder in a glass and stir it up and get a pocket full of dough. The secrets to success are hard work, determination, and education. There's no shortcuts.
You're very inspirational, Robert.
Oh,
I'm sure
God.
You've been told that many times, but really, there's so many people that would have just said, I don't know how to get out of this. I'm buried too deep, and you did the exact opposite, so good for you.
Well, quitting's not an option.
Yeah.
And I learned in life, and like I try to teach these kids, that your pain, my pain, our pain is not in vain, and that the greater the struggle, the greater the victory.
That's absolutely true. All the information can be found on your website, fromthebarrio.com. If there are schools, educators, anyone listening, maybe a parent who has a question, they can email you where?
They can email me at robert@fromthebarrio.com. That's robert@fromthebarrio, B-A-R-R-I-O.com.
And a phone number if somebody needs you?
Absolutely. Call me, 312-933-5619.
And very quickly, somebody has texted, I'm listening here, I won't be able to make it to the play. How do I help? Is there a page to contribute money to your cause?
Absolutely. You can go to fromthebarrio.com, and you could also go to themiraclecenter.org.
Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Really. I can't believe all you've accomplished, and I know you have a lot more to go, but you're really making great headway, so good for you.
It's been a long road, but you know what? It's the most rewarding experience I've ever been through in my entire life.
Yeah.
There was something in the coloring book.
Which I've already colored in, by the way.
I know, and it's hard to – you did not stay in the lines.
I didn't stay in the lines.
It was – I have to find this because it's like you've learned that it's not just – after many years of success and making lots of money, Robert feels that something is missing from his life. He realizes there is something more important than being successful, and you've proven that with your effort to help others. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Robert.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate
God bless.
It. We'll take a quick break, find out what's in the news next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. And if you'd like to jump in on our conversation with questions or comments or anything, 312-981-7200, we'll get that done. You're doing a funny dance.
Welcome to Bill and Wendy's Funk Party.
Funk Party every Monday. Rick James will be with us in just a little while. We'll talk to Rick James.
Is he still alive?
I hope so, because that interview will be awful if he isn't. While I was gone, did anything happen politically? Probably nothing,
no.
Really. Zero, probably.
There was no convention for the other side.
None?
There
they
was...
just didn't have one?
No.
I watched a bunch of it. You know, usually when we're on vacation, we all make a pledge to not watch TV. But it was almost too important to not see the speeches, so we watched them.
And that was an important thing. You do try to unplug.
Right.
And had there not been a Democratic National Convention, perhaps you would have been able to unplug.
Without a doubt.
But this was, I made fun of people crying when Bernie Sanders spoke. They were crying, and then I cried numerous times. There was a calm effect over the Democratic National Convention. Being together, you know, we're stronger together. And it wasn't based on fear like the other convention was.
Right.
In my own personal opinion.
They kind of went the opposite route. It was much more inclusion. It was much more, hey, we're as diverse as we are in every way, we all have to come together and not separate. So I was trying to figure out if that was the advantage of having the second convention where you could watch the speeches and watch
Absolutely.
The mood of the first and say, well, let's figure out how to approach this from a different way, you know?
I likened it to skee ball, Bill.
It's like skee ball. That's what it was like.
If you and I are at Haunted Trails and we're going to play skee ball, I'm going to want you to go first because I want to know what I have to beat.
That's true.
It's always beneficial going second, in my opinion.
Right. And then if you get enough coupons, you can win those Chinese handcuffs that are fun, where you put your fingers.
The finger cuffs.
Yeah, you put your fingers in. Because I know the Chinese army used those for centuries.
Hey,
now
it
you
worked.
Can win
it
them
saved
at
their
a,
country.
You can win them at Haunted Trails. So I did watch a bunch of the convention. And, you know, I'm not the first to say this. It seems like more and more things happen because of Donald Trump, of things he has said or done. And normally it would sink a candidate, but for some reason he just gets stronger and stronger and stronger, you know.
Although some things that have come out recently, I think,
seem to be very damning. But other things have happened in the past with him where you go, well, that's going to hurt him. But then you see the approval numbers and they just keep rising. So what do we know? I keep thinking that about the debates. I keep thinking the debates will be the one that will really show people that he's all talk, that he goes, I'm going to fix this, I'm going to fix this. But when it comes to a debate, you go, well, how are you going to fix that? And he won't have the answer. But like I said, because it's Donald Trump, for some reason, everything that would normally work against the guy keeps seemingly making him stronger somehow. I don't get it, but it does.
I get it, because we are just so disillusioned by the way government's been running that
right.
you just want something different.
Right.
And if it was any other person, I would be jumping on that bandwagon. We
yeah.
have to do something. It's not working the way it is, but... Is Donald Trump your guy? And if he is, vote for him.
Right.
I personally don't think he is. I'm scared if he runs this country. If he wins, I'm not moving.
Yeah.
My 13-year-old son asked me last night, does that one person have all the power? And, isn't there something called a veto? And I said, yeah. And then Dylan says to me, what if Donald Trump wins and then he has all these ideas and all his ideas are vetoed? Watch him just quit. And I said, Dylan, that is an interesting theory.
Oh, well.
I could see him doing that.
Anything can happen,
I know.
I guess. All right, so speaking of anything can happen, and I don't know if this is a surprise. I'm not surprised by it. I just find it to be interesting / entertaining. He's married to the lovely Melania Trump. She is Slovenian heritage, which I could be the first lady. Except that would be weird.
You're our first lady here
That's
at WTN.
So nice. You don't have to say that. That's very
I
nice.
I mean it
of you.
From the bottom
you're very
of
kind.
My heart.
You're very nice. So so he is married to Melania Trump, who, before being married to Donald, was a very successful model. So now some pictures have come up of Melania Trump, and you can see them in the New York Post on the front page, by the way.
Yeah, I know. You like that, don't
like
you?
Like a lot of newspapers would have a story like this, and they would tease it on the front page, but the New York Post goes, we got the pictures. We might as well throw them on the front page and entertain all of the Big Apple.
And with the headline?
With that, well, all right. So the headline is, do you have the headline?
I do. All right,
read the headline.
Menage a Trump.
That's beautiful.
Because there's a picture of her and another woman embracing.
Yes, yes.
And it's a photo shoot. It's not like the cameras were in her bedroom.
Right. This
and
was,
she was a model,
right?
French magazine,
right? Max magazine, is that the one? I think it's called Max magazine. I don't get that at the house. We don't get. we canceled our. I was like, do we want to get Model Railroader or Max magazine? Let's go with Model Railroader. All right. So now, is this or isn't this not a factor? Like, if this was, because I'm thinking about first ladies in the past.
Like this, shame on
That's
you.
That's the problem. If this were Pat Nixon, that would be crazy. If this were Rosalind Carter, if this was, you picked the president, Lady Bird Johnson, although you can see her Lady Bird if you look closely.
Oh, stop it. The Oval Office is another
The Oval
view.
Office. All right. So the question I have, and we'll read you the story from today's New York Post. The question is this. Is this the kind of thing that even matters anymore? Like there was a time where this would have been scandalous. Oh, the first lady doesn't ever close. The potential first lady doesn't ever close on, and she's hugging it out with another model. This is scandalous. We can't have this be our first lady. But now it's 2016. I think this doesn't even faze people anymore.
I have to be honest with you, and I'm surprised at my immediate reaction. Should we take a break and then discuss this?
I would love to hear it. Yeah. All right. So, again, if you want to jump in, we're 312-981-7200. The potential first lady, Melania Trump, and another model are embracing right there on the New York Post. It's from a magazine shoot from years ago. Does this even matter anymore?
Another picture. Are those jazz hands?
Sort of. All right. We'll discuss this and more topics next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy, and we're trying to make heads or tails out of a pictorial shoot that's in the New York Post today. It's a 1995 shoot featuring a model whose name at the time was Melania Knaus, or Melania K, as she was called in the photo shoot 25 years ago. But now you may know her by a different name, Melania Trump, our potential first lady. So we're trying to figure out what the ramifications of all this is. Does it even matter anymore that she did this very provocative photo shoot back in 1995? You know what it reminds me of in a lot of ways is what happened with Vanessa Williams, who was at the time Miss America, and then a very similar photo shoot materialized and was published in Penthouse, I believe, at the time,
I
right?
I think you're right.
Was that Bob Guccione's?
Yeah,
she was dethroned. And she was only Miss America, whose job it is to just... show up at slot car races and wave at people But this would be Melania Trump would just be the first lady of the United States, a position that normally wouldn't be associated with photographs of this type.
Here's my initial reaction to this, and I've shocked myself. It's not these times. It's just because you said in these times, does it even matter? I don't know that it matters. This is something she did before she even met this guy she
right.
married. So, I mean, yeah, we're getting a better look at her,
yes.
which is embarrassing.
Yes.
But first of all, she's not the one running for office.
Right. Right, right, right. And I'm sure there's plenty of people going, oh, the first husband, the potential first husband, Bill Clinton, has somewhat of a history too, doesn't he? Yes, he does. Yes, he does. Actually, that's a quick side note, if I may. That, to me, was one of the weirder aspects of the Democratic convention, was Bill Clinton talking about their love story and how he kind of pursued her, because I went, it's eerie hearing Bill Clinton talk about how he pursued a woman, even though this woman turned out to be his wife of a long time. He still has a little bit of a backstory. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but other people pursued him, too.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
This
I
was, know. You know, his true
know.
Love, which it was weird hearing her say nice things about
yeah,
him.
I know.
I hate to say that.
Well, they
have a relationship.
It seems like things are back kind of on track with them. And it does. I mean, it
can
is.
You,
a,
can you picture them cuddling?
I don't want to.
Don't you think we're stuck in what was and they've moved
yes.
on, but the rest of the country is still stuck
yes.
at Monica? That's
yes.
the problem.
That's
I
true.
I just can't get over her forgiving him. I just really can't.
But don't you know people who give her more credit and points for forgiving him? And also, don't you know people who say, well, that was the beginning of the end for me, is that a woman would stand by a guy who was such a snake? Don't you get both sides of that?
Yeah,
I get both sides of it.
I do. Somebody just said, after looking at the pictures, the Post has just sold me. I'm now a millennial.
Oh,
instead
how about
of millennial.
That? I like that. Here's a little bit of the story really quickly from today's New York Post. It says, here is the nation's would-be first lady. That's Melania. And right beside her is a second lady. 3 years before she met husband Donald Trump. It's written very, very beautifully, I think.
It is pretty funny.
3 years before she met her husband, Donald Trump, Melania Trump was snapped in a nude frolic with another female model. Bombshell photos obtained exclusively by the Post show. The lesbian-themed pics are from a two-day photo shoot in Manhattan back in 1995 when Melania Knaus, which is what she was called, was 25 years old and modeling under the name Melania Kay. Several were featured in Max magazine, a now-defunct French men's monthly, more than 20 years ago. Others have never been in print, and then in big red letters, until now. The raciest of these photos shows Melania lying nude in a bed as Scandinavian model Emma Eriksson, also naked.
How come she's not getting busted for all this stuff?
I wonder where she is now. I wonder if she even remembers this. If you're a model, you probably...
It was just a photo
right.
shoot.
She probably was like, did that? Yeah, I kind of remember.
What's
her
name, Kevin? Try and get Emma.
Emma Eriksson.
Emma Eriksson. Scandinavian model.
Before 11:30.
Scantinavian.
Scantinavian. She's in bed with Emma Eriksson, who's also naked, and embracing her from behind, just below her breasts, which are fully exposed.
Will you talk slower?
Yes. In another photo... Eriksson wears sheer stockings, a low-cut bustier, high heels, and a long robe, which were all designed by John Galino. I don't know why that's in there.
In case you're thinking about, for him.
In case you want to reenact this at home. How would you like to be the first lady? And raises a whip as if preparing to spank Melania. Well, if she was bad, we don't know what she did to deserve that.
Welcome back.
Who pretends to recoil. How do we know she's pretending? If somebody's coming at me with a whip, I'm gonna recoil.
Even if it's a friend, because you think,
right.
you know what, if they're messing around, they could still hit me with it.
Right. Even a licorice whip, Wendy. I don't want any part of it. Melania is more conservatively dressed. Well, she is a conservative. Melania is more conservatively dressed in a skin-tight gown and high heels, which I'm guessing would not be worn to the inauguration dinner. That would make the papers.
You don't even need me today, okay?
I always loved women together because I have been with a lot of women who desired the menage a trois, says Jarl Ale de Basseville, who is a Bond villain.
He looks like a Bond villain. You
he does
think,
look. He's the photographer. He's the French fashion photographer who snapped the pictures, but he looks like he was in several Bond movies.
And Steven Seagal called and wants his hair back.
Right. He does have.
Steven's mad because it looks better on you.
Well, because he doesn't have his face pulled tightly like Steven Seagal's. His face is on normally. This is beauty and not porn. I am always shocked by the porn industry because they are destroying the emotion and the essence of purity and simplicity, said the photographer. But both you and I agreed. The shoot took place in a Chelsea apartment that doubled as a photo studio, said De Busvel, a Paris artist and fashion photographer.
That's worrisome. You know, come to my apartment. It's also my photo studio.
Slash photo studio. That's not
weird.
And bring
a whip.
Right. Please bring a whip. What size whip do you wear? I think we're out of that size. Part of the shoot, which De Busvel said was inspired by Renaissance art. That's what I'd say if I was shooting pictures like this. These pictures, yeah, they're inspired by Renaissance art. Took place on the building's rooftop. Ooh. Said a fashion industry insider who was present at one of the photo sessions, but was not named.
Was it John Galino?
It was not John Galino. It was a different guy. All right. So, again, you make up your mind. They're right there on the internet for all to see. The New York Post's cover story today is Melania Trump, then Melania Kay, embracing with another girl. They forgot their clothes. So, you know how things happen.
Yes.
We forgot our outfits. Hold me. All right. We'll take a quick break. Kim has the news and then a lot more of the show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Kim, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder, joined by the Feistmaster General Eric Zorn. You know him from the Chicago Tribune, where he's been a columnist for over 100 years.
I have been, yes. I was actually one of the guys who wrote the columns backing Lincoln's candidacy.
Yep, and that was a good call.
It
you guys did the
call.
Right thing.
I urged him to run. He ran. What the rest is history. Literally history.
Didn't you say to him, wear a bigger hat? The hat you have on now is fine, the beanie, but wear the bigger hat.
The taller one. He had a little press fedora on.
Right. I remember.
So, no, Abe, no, don't go to the bucket. It's a bad look.
Eric, Wendy, and me, the three of us, we were discussing Melania Trump in the New York Post, these photos that have resurfaced, they're 20-some-odd years old, where Melania is without clothing. She's snuggling with another girl, and we were trying to figure out if this would even make a dent in anyone's mind anymore. Like, if this were Bess Truman, you could say, sorry, Harry, but you're done. These pictures are so damning. But with Donald Trump, it doesn't even make a dent, does it?
It doesn't. I've asked people, do you think that Hillary Clinton, if she had had five different children with three different wives, she would be a candidate for president? She wouldn't have been automatically disqualified for that alone.
Yeah.
I think there's a whole different set of rules that seem to apply to Donald Trump. And this isn't, I mean, the thing is like, okay, so Melania was a model, and this was before she even met him, right? And Lord knows, so many people have had naked pictures of themselves taken these days that it seems to be less and less disqualifying. But
isn't it kind of weird that it's the potential first lady? Everything you said is true, but it's hard to envision other first ladies in a similar situation.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, so much of what's happened in the Trump campaign, so many things that he has said would have been disqualifying to any other candidate.
Right.
I mean, we've talked about this before. Like, Howard Dean essentially got drummed out of the president's race for going, yeah.
For naming states
yeah.
real loudly.
And people were really criticizing. Remember when Al Gore sighed during the debate?
Yeah.
They said, that's not presidential. You
right.
sighed. You know, and was it George H.W. Bush checked his watch
yeah.
during the debate? They're saying, oh, that man doesn't have the temperament to be president. And all those kind of things are just out the window for this one man. I'm not sure that we won't revert to that next time around.
So how is it that none of these things not only damage him, but they tend to make him stronger? His polls always go up whenever any of these
things
happen.
Well, his whole brand is about being never apologizes. He's a strong man. He's a tough guy.
And people are so sick of politicians. They just really want something new and fresh. Regardless of how bad it may be, it at least will demonstrate change.
Well, I did a piece for the Sunday Tribune about Jesse Ventura, if you remember him. In 1998,
sure.
He won the governorship of Minnesota. And he was similar in a lot of ways to Trump. He was more libertarian, and he had some more, you know, a few more liberal views. But he came in and basically said, you know, this regular politics is for the birds, and I'm going to say what I think. And he was running against two, you know, a really mainstream Republican, really mainstream Democrat, and he ran as a Reform Party candidate. And he was just this, like, blast of fresh air, and he was also the guy who was basically saying up yours to the political establishment, and people were like in the mood for change. And the weird thing about that was that it was, this was the late 90s. Things weren't that bad. The economy was roaring along, right? I mean, everywhere.
Yeah.
And in fact, what had happened in Minnesota, the government, state government, was split. So it was Democrats, Republicans. They were, you know, split in the legislature and so on. They weren't making a lot of progress. So there was this sense that we have about Congress now in Washington that we also have about the legislature in Springfield, which is when you have divided government, you don't get a lot done in general.
Right.
And it's kind of by design in some ways. But he played right into that, and people were saying this guy's a joke, just like they said Trump is a joke, that he's just a celebrity, just like Trump's just a celebrity. And he's just trying to do this to enhance his brand because Ventura is a radio talk show host, former
WWF
wrestler. And all these things, all these eerie parallels, including the fact that he ended up winning.
Yeah.
Was he a good governor?
Well, I actually read up quite a bit about that. And you know, basically he got bored with it because it wasn't as easy as he thought. And he didn't even run for re-election.
Right.
And he sent a bunch of tax rebate checks to people because the economy was going well. And he did some things that were good. He had some programs that weren't so good. And basically he was kind of this blip. That people look back and go, yeah, that's kind of weird. We did that, didn't we? But And one thing I also said in the column was, you know, the governor of Minnesota doesn't have the nuclear codes. So the amount of damage that a governor of Minnesota could do in 4 years is pretty limited. He also doesn't appoint people to lifetime appointments on the Supreme Court, which is what a president of the United States does. So,
but everything you said about how people in general, and I include myself in this, are kind of fed up with the political process and the people who run. I've heard many people say, why would we want anybody to be president who wants to be president? It's such a undesirable job when you stop and think about it. Shouldn't we disclude anybody who openly says, I want to be the president? We go, no, that's not the person for us.
As soon as you announce your interest in it,
we don't want you.
Erase your name from the list.
But if we're all in agreement, or most of us are in agreement, that the political process is not what it could be or should be, and I am so open to an outsider running for office, even as high as the presidency, but this guy just seems dangerous.
He does. I mean, there's a certain value in experience because you're dealing with the president's dealing with international situations and also trying to, you know, pull the levers of a very complicated and large government.
Yeah.
And deal with, you know, all these various interests in Congress. It takes some skill. One of the things that Republicans told me over and over again when Barack Obama was running in 2008 was, he's never run anything.
Right.
This guy's never been in any office except he was a U.S. senator for 4 years. And U.S. senator is not a job where you're in charge of a whole lot. And he was a state senator before that. Otherwise, they'd always say he's just a community organizer, But you had to, you know, the idea was that here's a guy with a great deal of intellect and seemed like he had a lot of common sense. And, you know, you surround yourself with people who can do those kind of things. I think that's sort of what Trump is saying, is like, yeah, I've never been elected to anything. But I have run successful businesses, and I'm going to surround myself with people who know all these foreign policy matters. So that's the thing. But this idea that somebody's going to come in from the outside. I mean, Obama was not that much of an outsider, really. I mean, he was part of Congress. He was promising all kinds of change. And when he got there, he realized that our system of government is set up basically not to do a whole lot, especially with the filibuster. You know, you have to have. And at one point, he had 60 votes in the Senate, which was enough to overcome filibusters, and he had a majority in the House, and he was barely able to get through some things. And the Obamacare bill that he passed had to have all kinds of compromises in it in order to bring over those last couple of somewhat conservative Democrats. It's hard to make big changes. That's something that we should all, I think, feel a little bit
relieved.
Good about. Yeah, I mean, it's a sense of calm can be over, which is like, you know. In terms of domestic policy, certainly that you know, no matter how nutty your president is, there are a lot of checks and balances. Foreign policy is a little different.
And if Trump wins, in my opinion, again, we've talked about this ad nauseum. What can I do? I'm not moving. I'm not moving to another country. He's our president. I respect the office, and I'll hope for the best.
Hope for the best. Well, have you been following this story about the Gold Star family, the Muslim family?
Oh, sure.
Yes.
The Khans.
And the interview with George Stephanopoulos. Did you plenty of that or talk about earlier today?
We haven't, but it's...
Essentially, he asked Donald Trump, you know, have you ever... The accusation against the guy was, you've never sacrificed. The Muslim Muslim father who's lost his son in the army in Iraq said, you've never sacrificed. And Trump's response was, well, yeah, I've sacrificed. I've made businesses and so on.
I've worked hard.
And I just wrote a thing online, and it's going to be probably posted by now, of what Trump should have said to that sacrifice question. And can I read that after we
come back? We'll come back with that and more. It's Eric Zorn joining us, Bill and Wendy on WGN. Eric Zorn is joining Wendy and myself. He of the Chicago Tribune, one of the fine, fine columnists our city has, and we're talking about Donald Trump's relationship, quote unquote, with the Khan family. Just give a little bit of background on this Gold Star family.
Well, really quickly, the son of the in the Khan family was a captain in the army, and he died in Iraq in 2004. And Mr. Khan gave a speech at the Democratic Convention on Thursday night, in which one of his accusations against Donald Trump was, you know, you have never sacrificed anything. We have sacrificed so much, and you have sacrificed nothing. And then George Stephanopoulos asked Trump about this on Friday for taping for this week. And he came back and said, well, you know, I've sacrificed. I've created businesses. And Hillary Clinton's speechwriters wrote that line. And, you know, it was like
he's provided tens of thousands of jobs, and he's worked hard to
build
his
business.
He's worked
hard, and that's the sacrifice he's made for his country. And what I've just written, and I just wanted to read this to you, this is going to be posted online, it's what Trump should have said to the sacrifice question. When someone said, you know, you haven't sacrificed anything. And Stephanopoulos said, he said you have sacrificed nothing and for no one. What would you say to that father? And I said, he should have said this. He's absolutely right. I've made no sacrifices for my country. I've lived a blessed, charmed life, enjoying the freedom that has been guarded and guaranteed by those who have sacrificed, who have risked and in many cases lost their lives fighting for our great country. My success is built upon and sustained by the sacrifices of others going back 240 years. And the same, of course, is true of Hillary Clinton, of Barack Obama, of Mitt Romney, of Paul Ryan, and of you, George Stephanopoulos, and the vast majority of the members of the media who thrilled to Mr. Khan's accusation against me. The Department of Veterans Affairs estimates that a little more than 7% of all living Americans, about 13% of males, have ever served in the military. The rest of us may be patriotic. We may pay a considerable sum in taxes to fund our fighting forces. We may advocate on behalf of veterans and salute them at parades, but we cannot claim to have sacrificed for our country. What the fortunate, grateful majority can do, however, is strive to create a world in which far fewer families like the Khans make the ultimate sacrifice. A world that is safe and peaceful, free from the threat of tyranny and terrorism. No, my family and I have not sacrificed for the liberty we enjoy, but like tens of millions of others in the same situation, that does not make us any less grateful for those who have sacrificed or any less determined to serve well that nation to which they gave so much.
That would have been a great answer.
That would have been an answer. See, I should be writing speeches for somebody.
But so un-Trump.
So un-Trump.
It's such a beautiful answer, but it's not... It doesn't seem to be words that would come out of his mouth.
Way off brand. But, you know, I was thinking a lot about the concept of sacrifice. And you know, the truth is that, you know, around this table here, most of us, we haven't, my kids aren't in the military. Kids aren't in the military.
No.
And I don't have relatives who've died serving our country in any of the wars. You know, my dad was in the Navy back in the 40s. But,
yeah.
But you know, I mean, in terms of an actual sacrifice that I personally have made, no. And I think we need to acknowledge that and realize that we are asking families, we were asking the volunteers, people who go over to fight for us, to make incredible sacrifices for us, and we should always be grateful for that. And we shouldn't pretend that, you know, the little things that we do, you know, like, oh, I created some jobs, or gosh, I've written some columns that encourage patriotism, that that's a
sacrifice.
It's not a sacrifice.
Right. Can
concept. I read this text? How did that family sacrifice? The only guy who lost anything was the guy who died. He made the sacrifice. He was a fully grown adult and made his own decision. They're coming in fast
and
furious.
They lost
their parents did not stop him or try to stop him, nor did they offer him up as a sacrifice. This listener cannot really understand what a sacrifice that is to lose your child while fighting for this country.
That seems like a very tenured response. I think that when you leap to the defense of Donald Trump in a situation like this, it's really an error in, you know, just, you know, politically and morally, ethically, it's an error to say, like, that was a smart thing to say. And you know, Trump's way out of this is to apologize. And he never, ever apologizes.
Phil. I don't apologize. You
know? What about him? The mother, Ghazala Khan is her name, who stood alongside of her husband while he made his speech but said nothing. Donald Trump is attacking her, saying that she was told to say nothing when that wasn't exactly the case. She opted to say nothing because, as she has said, when she sees pictures of her son or thinks about it, she just gets very emotional. It would have been impossible for her to have pulled off a successful speech, in her opinion. So why would Trump put an attack on her? I don't understand.
Well, it was
in their culture that they won't let a woman speak.
It was an attack on the Muslim faith, and the implication was that because it is true, I think, to say that in the Islamic world women have a secondary role. I mean, there's no getting around that. But
right, that's a definite. But in this particular instance,
it was an extremely tone deaf thing to say. I mean, she's still a grieving mother. She's up there, and she wrote a very powerful essay in the Washington Post. If you get it, we don't have time now, but if you guys later in the day, John McCain's statement today about this case was just really powerful.
Yeah.
McCain, who knows what it means to sacrifice for this country, who spent all the time in a prisoner of war camp, despite
the fact that he was captured,
even though he was captured, yes, of course, but that, you know, a genuine hero, you know, a guy like Bob Dole who gave his left arm essentially to the country.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these are people who that is sacrifice. That is, and the families also pay a price for that.
Absolutely.
And I think dragging in, you know, the Muslim faith. The woman wrote a very powerful piece for the Washington Post over the weekend that talked about the fact that she wasn't like she couldn't speak. She has a voice, but she's still grieving too hard to have spoken. But the symbolism of those parents up there. And again, you know, I criticized the Republican convention for putting up a woman who's lost her son in the Benghazi raid for saying, I blame Hillary Clinton for this loss. Now, this family didn't get up and blame Republicans for the loss of their son. It was a very personal attack on Trump, and it had to do not so much with his foreign policy stuff, but his interest in keeping Muslims out of this country and screening them and so on. So that's really what he was talking about. And the message behind that speech was, look, Muslims and Muslim Americans or people who are immigrants who are Muslim can be very patriotic, can serve their country to the, you know, to the last full measure.
Yep.
And that's an important thing to remember when we're trying, especially when we're trying to foment these divisions that Donald Trump is trying to foment.
I want to apologize. We have several callers who all have very good points to make, and unfortunately we are out of time right now. But thank you, everybody, for checking in with us through text and by phone. I wish we had more time. We don't, but we appreciate it. Eric, thank you. We appreciate you as well. It's Eric Zorn. Read him in the Chicago Tribune. We'll find out what's coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch in a moment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Kim, thanks very much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and it's Wendy, and we're here for you.
You're back.
Yeah, I came back. I told you I'd come back.
Were you here for the first half?
Yeah, I was here the whole first half. You didn't notice?
Welcome back.
You didn't notice I was here?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I was there through the whole show. That's that's hurtful. I was away for a couple of days on a much well-deserved vacation, Wendy.
Was it an excursion?
No, it was more of a vacation than an excursion.
Did you put your feet up? Did you lay by the pool? Did you read?
I laid in the pool. I laid near the pool. I laid anywhere
did
there was...
Did you have a raft?
No.
You're just buoyant.
I'm like a miracle.
These little water wings.
Yeah, I'm a human water wing, is what I am. By the way, have you ever been to New England? You've never been there, have you?
I have never. The only time we were going to go to Cape Cod, we were on our way driving, and we got hit by a semi, and our car was totaled, and I had a concussion, and we never made it back.
Do you know, out of all the people I've ever met, you've had more vacation mishaps than everybody combined?
You know, I realized that as I said that out loud. I, for as lucky as I am in successful things in my life, I've had some goofy
vacation. Seems like they're almost all centered around a vacation, though.
Do you see now why I don't like to go on vacation?
Because it equals disaster.
Pretty much. That was the summer that Jaws came out, too. So I was a little apprehensive about going there in the first place. So maybe it's me. Maybe I'm like Carrie. Maybe I willed an accident to happen to prevent the mishap in the water.
I bet that's it exactly. I bet that's precisely what happened to you.
Interesting.
I'm more of a pool person than I am an ocean person.
Me
I love
too.
To see the ocean. To look at the ocean it's a sight to behold, you know, but when it comes to swimming and frolicking about, I would almost always take a swimming pool over the ocean.
Me too.
And I don't know why.
I'm with you on that too.
Are you the same?
Totally the same.
So why is it? Is it the fear of the unknown?
I don't like the sand. Jim, like when we go to Hawaii and stuff, he is in the ocean all day.
Is he?
He's a stronger swimmer than I am because it's kind of scary, too. It's big.
And there's things that just can come out of the ocean.
Exactly.
And take a bite out of you. Like in the pool, you know, if something takes a bite out of you.
Hopefully it's your partner.
You would hope. Right. You would hope. But here's the problem at the pool that I was just at is that I like to, like, after swimming for a while, I enjoy just laying there and reading. I just enjoy that.
Although, isn't it too bright? I have a problem. Do you sit in the shade?
You have to angle yourself so that you're getting some sun, but that, you know, so you have to figure out, like, when I get there, I look at the position of the sun, and I use a compass, and I figure out where the sun will be over the next hour or hour and a half, and I go, okay, if I sit in this chair this way, I'll get just enough sun, and I'll be able to read, and it won't get in my eyes. You know, I'll be able to read, right?
Do you read off of an iPad or a tablet or actual
book? No, book.
Because it's impossible. You have to be totally
with
covered.
With a tablet, it's impossible.
Even a book is tough for me because I don't like to wear sunglasses because then you don't get tan where the sunglasses are.
Right.
So it's almost impossible for me to read at a beach.
Plus, I don't know. I can't speak for you on this. Do you? Because I now need reading glasses when I'm reading.
Yeah.
And when you have on your sunglasses and your reading glasses, kids laugh and make fun of you.
You can get a combo
platter.
The guy with all the
glasses is here. I guess you could get a combo. Yeah, you could get prescription, I guess. Yeah, all right, but I didn't. But here's what I've noticed in New England, and it's not quite that way here, but it is in New England, is that the people who tend to hang around the pool are very loud, and reading is nearly impossible. Everybody sounds like John Panette when you're there. I'm not making that up. Every conversation is loud.
For those people who don't know John Panette.
There was a guy. Well, John Panette was a comedian and a friend of ours. We had John on the show with us several times, and sadly he passed away last year. Yeah, it's the guy who's famous for the Chinese buffet bit because John was a larger man. So he would explain how, even though it says all you can eat at the Chinese buffet,
they'd try and kick him out early.
They didn't want him to eat all he could.
He'd still be there.
Right. So everybody who talks very loud and explains everything in great detail. So even though I'm trying to read Dr. Sleep by Stephen King, I was treated to some of the most inane conversations by people all around the pool. And it was just relentless. One guy talked from the time he got there. He didn't stop. And when the people he knew left, he was talking to strangers. Like he said at one point, he goes, people ask me how often they should see a skin doctor to see if they have melanoma. And when people ask me that, I say, don't go every year. Go every 6 months. He's explaining this in great deal. And I'm thinking, who just goes up to this guy and asks him how often they should see a dermatologist? That's never happened, ever.
He was lonely.
I think that's what it was.
But see, that's where you got to just have your own stuff. Because it doesn't say you have to be quiet by a pool. I like to be quiet because when I'm there, I like to chill.
Right.
I tell the boys, be quiet. If there's a baby crying, I go drown it.
Right.
No, I don't. But I mean, you keep it.
Wow.
But then if you just kind of sit back and listen, there is a lot of frolicking and noise going on. Typically, it kind of all blends in like white noise. But when you got a guy who's that loud close to you, you can't think of anything but that.
I wanted so badly. This is the sequel to The Shining, and I've been looking forward to reading this book, and I wanted to read it purposely. This story takes place where we were. It takes place in New Hampshire, which is just 15 minutes away. And I thought, that'll be even cooler to read this book kind of where it takes place. So I had him, and then there were two families bickering because both their children brought noodles, pool noodles, into the pool.
What's the problem with that?
They couldn't determine whose noodles were who. So
Get a Sharpie marker and put their initial on the end of it.
You could have done that.
Are they two different colors?
No, they were all kind of bright neon, and they had a lot of noodles. You could have made a pasta salad with all the pool noodles. So they were going, Amanda, those can't be your pool noodles. We already took your pool noodles back to the room. But she was sure that those were hers, so there was a lot of back and forth on that. So just like my goal was to just read.
That's when you got to get a private room with a private balcony and a private pool.
Yeah, I know.
You have to.
It was still, like, despite that, it couldn't have been more. It was really, really nice. But you just, there's no way, there's no polite way to say to everybody at the pool, some of us are trying to read. That
no,
wouldn't play.
There's not, I know there's a quiet car in the trains. There's no, not a quiet pool no. and a loud pool. Although right. a lot of places have like the kid pool and the adult pool.
Right. But you know that the kid pool is just there because kids are relieving themselves in the pool. That's all you're
that's
getting
That's the baby pool.
Right, the baby pool. That's
but there's
what's
also
going
a kid, at the resort we stay in Disney, there's the baby pool that I don't go in because...
You know.
Yeah. And then there's a kid pool where the kids are told to go hang out, kind of.
Oh,
and
yeah?
then there's an adult pool.
Oh, I like that.
It's still in close proximity, but it kind of, you know, if the noise is a little farther away, you
right.
can drown it out a little better.
Right.
Not if
right.
some guy's talking about the dermatologist.
Oh, he's in great deal, he's explaining to somebody who he had never met before. He's showing him, like, where this mole was on his arm. And he's going, now, when I first had this... It was the size of about a rock candy. He's explaining that it was the size of a rock candy. And I'm just going, you don't even know that guy. Why would you tell him that?
That's when the guy who he's telling it to should say, I'm good. Went to the dermatologist last week. Thank you, though.
It is the New England way to not just listen, but it like everything is back and forth in like the most storied detail. Like even Stephen King, who's known to be a little verbose, even he would have been impressed by the detail that these guys were explaining various moles and warts and what they could
God.
Potentially be.
And they're swimming in the pool that you're
I know.
In. That's a pleasant thought.
All right. We have much to discuss with you. Stick around. If you want to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. We're 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Bill, you mentioned Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln.
I just want to tell you, he is on a list of the 15 smartest U.S. presidents of all time, which we'll discuss sometime before we get out of here.
All right. Is he I don't think he's the smartest, but
nope.
I bet he's high up.
He is high up. 16th president, 1861, shortly before the outbreak of the American War.
Uh-huh.
And he had a pretty high IQ. We'll tell you more. I have the top 15 smartest U.S. presidents of all time.
All right. I'm anxious to hear this. Here's some audio that is rather disturbing. I'll set it up a little bit. Keep in mind, this is just crazy disturbing on several levels. Every summer, this happens a couple times, and it's happened twice in the last several days. This is where somebody decides, even though it's really, really hot outside, I can go in and do something and leave my child. Sometimes it's an animal, and that's not good either. You don't want to leave a dog or a pet in the car. But when you're leaving a child or a baby in the car, it's only going to spell disaster. There's no way around it. So first, early in the week, there was a situation at a Costco in New Jersey where they left a small child in a car in sweltering heat. And now the audio I'm going to play for you just happened over the weekend. This took place in a parking lot of a Walmart in Owosso, Oklahoma. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't believe a mother who says, and you'll hear it for yourself, because they confronted her. She was in this Walmart shopping for 45 minutes, the mother and another young daughter, while they left a one-year-old in a baby seat with all the windows rolled up and most of the doors locked. Luckily, they
of the doors.
Yeah, one of the doors. People who were getting in the car next door heard noise inside the car, and they didn't know what was making this noise. And it turned out it was a baby in the baby seat in the back. So they went around the car to see if there was some way in, and all the doors were locked. But one of the doors...
Which is even worse, that they that a door was left unlocked.
Yeah, it is. But now the mother will maintain, and you'll hear it for herself, that she just simply forgot.
Yeah, you know,
they went shopping.
It could happen.
And she forgot.
Yeah, that you know, stuff like that.
It is the premise of both Home Alone movies, that they just forgot Kevin. You
well,
know?
He got lost in the mix. They
right.
had other children, and they just assumed someone else...
Had Kevin.
Yeah.
Right.
You have one kid. You don't really forget when that kid's not with you.
It seems hard to imagine that you would bring a baby somewhere with you and then go inside and shop for 45 minutes and not go, I didn't bring the baby in. But I've never come close to this. But listen to the audio as they confront the mother, the authorities confront the mom, and how upset she is for forgetting that she left the baby in the car. Listen.
Hi.
Did you hear her?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Who's the mother?
Oh my God.
Who's the mother?
Oh my God.
Who's the mother? No, she's not.
Oh God. Oh God. I can't believe I did that. Oh my God. That is crazy. Oh my God.
go out here.
Oh, my God. What did I do? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Are you the mother?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Who is this? Another daughter?
Yes. Oh, my God, Victoria. Did you bring it? Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! I'm so sorry! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God!
So after a while, you can stop it there.
Can I just tell you, after hearing this, Bill, I believe her, and I believe that can be done. A frazzled, harried mother. Maybe she thought that she dropped the kid off at daycare. I mean, there's no way this young mother is acting.
I want so badly to believe that. Because
that's gut-wrenching. I agree with you, Wendy.
It's so awful. It is gut-wrenching, and I want so badly to be on her side. But
it's a horrible thing. There are stories of parents, men and women, who put their baby seat on top of the car.
I know.
And they're packing everything in their car to get ready to work to drop the kid off at daycare. And they've pulled out and the baby seat has fallen off the roof and the kid has died. And you say, how could you? You are frazzled. I'm not saying it's right, but I believe this poor young mother.
I want to emphasize that the baby miraculously, being in a car that was the temperature in the car. Now, this was a 100-degree day, and the temperature in the car reached somewhere between 120 and 138 degrees. The baby's in the baby seat for 45 minutes.
Oh, God.
And is okay, which that defies all logic in and of itself. I can't imagine how that's possible. That's a miracle. But how could 45 minutes elapse? What you said is true. If you have a busy schedule and you're doing a million things at once, I understand where some time could pass, but how could this mother be with her other daughter for 45 minutes and not have one of them go, we brought the baby, right? Where's the baby? We brought the baby.
Depends how old the other kid is. And again, if this mom had in her mindset, this is Tuesday, this is when the infant goes to daycare, she's not in a hurry because she doesn't think the kid's in there. She has no idea. I mean, it's horrific.
It is beyond horrific. And it's so lucky for everybody, obviously, that this baby is okay. The other child is, it doesn't say in the story, but you can see her in the video. There's a video of this, of the audio we just played. She looks to be about 10, give or take a year or so. It just seems like at some point during those 45 minutes, one of them says, we left the baby in the car. Or, I hate to be the bad guy in this, maybe the mother was one of those people who just says, we're just going to run in, grab a couple things, and run out. Shouldn't be a problem.
Well, anyone who shops on a regular basis knows you can't get in and out in enough time
probably
to leave
not.
A kid in the car, because you
probably
look
not.
At something and then, oh, look at that. And 2 hours later, you're like, how have I been in the store this long?
Yeah.
Her reaction seemed so, that was not acting. She really
She's
couldn't.
She's genuinely upset.
It sure seemed like she really
right.
had no recollection of that kid being in the car, which is terrible. It's a mom. You should be on top of things. But everybody's trying to do too much these days. I could see where it would happen.
Right. A postscript to the story, this mother, her name is Hannah Sekendi.
How old is she? Young mother, isn't she?
It doesn't say how old. No, I would say around 30, give or take, again, a couple of years, but I would say right around 30. Arrested for child abuse because of what you just heard and being held on $50,000 bond.
And she should be arrested. I'm not saying she shouldn't.
Right.
I just, after listening to that, there are people who forget things. I mean, it's something on such a smaller scale. You walk out and you're like, oh, my God, did I unplug the curling iron?
Yeah.
It's like sometimes you don't know. You forget.
Yeah.
There's too much going on. Oh, that's horrible.
Isn't it?
Thanks
it
for
is.
Pumping us up.
It's horrible. And that's, like I said, that's the second incident in about a week. There was one in New Jersey earlier at a Costco. So, all right, we have to take a quick break. We've got a lot more coming your way next. News in just a moment with Kim. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and we are not going to talk politics. We're not going to talk about locking kids in hot cars. We are going to talk about fun, goofy, pranky things. Are you cool with that, Bill?
Love it.
All right. I'd like to introduce to you Kevin Mannion and his sister, Claire Mannion. Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Kevin, I believe you are Bill's idol this point.
You absolutely
are. I appreciate it. That's the first I've ever been called someone's idol.
You are.
So.
Well, it's you say it loosely. You know? But all right, so everybody has pictures in their house of either wedding pictures, the kids' pictures from every year of school, hanging on the walls, on the dresser, whatever. You took some of the family photos that have been out for a while and replaced them with an actor. Who's the actor?
Steve Buscemi. I mean, we were...
Why? That's my first question.
You know, me and my sister, we were sitting at the dinner table one night. My parents were out at some event, and I was thinking, you know, what could we do to kind of, you know, pull a fast one on Mom and Dad? And I was looking around and looking at the pictures, and I'm kind of thinking to myself, like, how often do they really look at these? Like, maybe we should change them with something else. She was like, okay, but what should we change them to? And I thought for a little bit, and I thought, you know what, Steve Buscemi. And, you know, just because, I mean, if you're not looking for that picture, you might not notice it. But once you finally do, it's going to catch you off guard. It's definitely not something you're expecting.
And
so.
It's so beautifully random. I mean, there's other ways to have gone with this, but to replace it with a great character actor like Steve Buscemi, that speaks a lot to both of your characters.
Hey, I mean, and he's a great actor. I love a lot of his movies. I think all the characters he plays are really, I mean, really awesome. All of them in Fargo. Mm-hmm. He does great in the Adam Sandler movies, mm-hmm. So yeah, I figured, why not?
Why not?
Yeah. He is an unusually looking man.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you
I mean, not good or bad, just he has a very unique look.
It's a distinct look, definitely.
Yes. It's the perfect face to, you know, have around the house.
Isn't it, though? But he looks, for people who don't know either of you or your family, he doesn't resemble anyone in the family. No
not
one could
all.
Look at it and go, that's Dad. No, wait, it's not Dad. It's Steve Buscemi. That doesn't make sense.
So, Claire, I want to ask you. So you, your brother hits you with this idea, and so you guys were in on it together. Mm-hmm. And what was the goal? To just see how long it took your mom or dad to notice?
Yeah, we just one photo each day.
Yeah.
So very slowly, like, we didn't do them all at once. We wanted to see how long it would take, and took my mom five days.
5 days before she noticed. How many? So you were up to obviously five photos at that point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. All in the same place in the house or spread out throughout the house?
Four of them were in kind of the big main family room.
Yeah.
One was in a different room.
Nice.
And my dad actually noticed one of them after the first day, and he said, why is your senior picture replaced with Steve Buscemi? And I said, don't tell Mom, but there's actually another one around the house, too. I'm gonna change these until she notices. And he said, all right, I'll keep quiet. And so eventually she was in the kitchen, and you could tell she was looking off kind of into the family room, really kind of confused, like, why is Kevin's senior picture? His head looks a lot bigger. There's something off. And she went over and just burst out laughing. She thought it was hilarious.
Now,
so.
You didn't have Steve, like, dressed in your graduation gown or anything, did
no,
you? It was
yeah,
just
no.
his face.
Yep, just a
headshot.
Yep, just a
headshot.
Picture from Google. Yeah.
So. Oh, that's beautiful.
There are pictures of just Steve Buscemi, and it would stick out because it's they're weird pictures of Steve Buscemi. So kudos
solo
to you.
Shots.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
So what did she say? She started laughing, but what? So I mean, did she go, "You guys"? What was her reaction?
She was like, "Why?"
Yeah. Why is the right question?
First she said why, but I mean, I like to play jokes around the house.
Yeah.
It's definitely not something I don't think. It wasn't unexpected, I should say. This
nothing
is the
out of the ordinary.
Nothing out of the ordinary for me and her to pull. So, yeah.
So this little prank has pretty much gone viral, hasn't it?
Yeah, and honestly, I'm pretty shocked by the response it's gotten. We were actually, after I did it the first day, Claire told me, she said, once you get to four pictures, I'm going to tweet about this because it could go viral.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking to myself, all right, whatever, like, who knows?
Who's going to care?
Exactly.
Really, you're thinking that.
And then after the first day, it was up to a couple hundred favorites and retweets, and I was like, wow, people really like this. And then I woke up the next morning, and I think it was at like 4,000 or 5,000 favorites or something. And I was just kind of like, okay, like this is getting some recognition that I was not expecting. So
I don't know if you know this, but as of this morning, I'm not on there now, but on the front page of MSN, was your story on the front page of MSN.
I can't say I knew that. So, all right, I'll take it.
Okay. It wasn't the number one story, but it, right among all the headlines of everything, all the big news in the world was your Steve Buscemi prank.
That's amazing.
Wow. That's...
All right, I just want to put the names out there again. Kevin Mannion and his sister Claire Mannion, because Steve Buscemi, he hasn't gotten a hold of you yet?
Not yet.
Holding out hope.
Yep, fingers crossed. But
Do you picture a universe where at Steve Buscemi's house, he's replacing photographs of himself with photos of your family?
I could only hope. I could only hope that's what he's doing.
He's, as you know, because you both are fans of his, he's a very quirky guy, so I would think that hearing a story like this would make him want to reach out to you.
I would hope so.
Wouldn't that be nice?
It would be an absolute honor to meet him. That would be awesome.
For sure.
And what would he give them? Like a copy of all of his movies on DVD and a new digital camera or something?
Maybe a new headshot, you know?
Yeah, I'd love that.
Something to remember him by.
I'm sure we'll have a framed photo of Steve Buscemi in our house forever.
You have to.
Yeah.
I
mean, seriously.
You have to.
Well, now there should be a shrine to him in your house. Was your mom mad at your dad for being in on it and not telling her? Like, honey, you should have told me.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
She would expect that.
Yeah, Are there other brothers and sisters in your family?
Yes, we have an older brother, Jack Mannion.
Shout out to Jack.
Hi, Jack.
He would have no part of this.
Why is Jack not involved?
Well, Jack is actually a bit older than us. He's 23, and he lives in Detroit. He's working out in Detroit, so he's not home for the summer.
His picture is all over the place. His senior picture that's really big up next to Steve. So you can really see Jack, but Jack's just not here to enjoy it.
Is he proud of you for what you've done, or is he embarrassed by you?
Oh, yes. He loves it. He actually told me at work, he's had a couple of people come up to him and been like, you know, you're all over the internet right now. And he's like, I know, that's my brother and sister for you. So,
what's next for you guys?
I mean, you know, like a good magician, I try not to reveal my secrets. You know, I gotta keep the people guessing and waiting. So, but I'll come up with something. I'll think of something.
It's so funny that much time elapsed, and your mom probably passed those photos dozens of times, and not a single time did she think anything was a little off center.
Yeah, I mean, and I mean, it's true. I mean, if you think about it in your own home, who knows? Maybe your pictures might be replaced with Steve Buscemi. Like, it's not something people usually look at like all the time. So I think it was.
You should have a business where you go into people's homes and just do this.
Hey, that's a good startup idea.
The response we got, it's all like, I'm doing this with Nicolas Cage. I'm doing this with Leonardo DiCaprio. Everyone wants to do this now. It's so funny.
I have to be honest with you. It would have taken me more than 5 days. We have, like, when you walk in, you know, everybody has pictures on that wall going up the stairs. That's just tradition. Everybody does that. And I can't, I mean, I look at them when I'm thinking about it, but going about your everyday life, you see that the frames are up there. You see that not one has fallen down.
Right.
You don't necessarily look at them every time you walk by. I think 5 days, good for your mom.
when my wife and I found out we were having kids years and years ago, we drove to her parents' house to give them the good news. And we got to their house, and they weren't home, but their door was unlocked. So we went into their house, and we're just sitting, waiting for them. And a half an hour became an hour, became 90 minutes, and they just didn't show up. So I said, well, let's go shopping. We'll do some stuff. We'll come back. We'll give them the good news. But before we left, we opened up, her mom collected spoons. Okay. So I took all the spoons out of this display case and I spilled out the words, "We'll be back," on their carpet in their living room. So then later on in the day, when we did come back, we're talking to them about the baby and other things, the upcoming babies. And then I go, so anything out of the ordinary for you guys today? No, not really. Nothing at all. I go, nothing with the spoons? And they go, no, not. Oh, you know what? This is kind of strange. Somebody spelled out, "We'll be back," on our carpet with the spoons. But they were so nonplussed by
it. They knew it was you.
They didn't. But it didn't even occur to them how weird that was.
Be a little ominous if
Probably just ghosts or aliens. No big deal.
Well, I think you guys should hook up. Bill, you'd be perfect with the Mannion kids.
I'm in. If you guys need a partner,
kids.
I want in.
Hey, I'll let you know. I've got the studio's email now, so I'll keep you posted.
I want to be part of this.
All right. Well, Kevin Mannion, his sister Claire, will you please keep us posted if Steve Buscemi contacts you? Because I want to know what he sets you up with.
You'll be the first to know, of course. Definitely.
Excellent.
We're so proud of both of you. And I already told you this, but when they give out the Nobel Prize this year, if it's not the two of you, something's horribly wrong.
I'll be waiting for it. So.
Those are the Mannions, Kevin and Claire, friends of Steve Buscemi, friends of ours.
Oh, was there someone you wanted to say hi to or something? something?
I just like to give a quick couple shout-outs. I want to give a shout-out to the family. I know you guys are listening right now. Thank you. I want to give a shout-out to my friend Tony, my friend Jordan, the Bando Boys from school. I want to give a quick shout-out to my boss, Andy, for letting me take work off today.
Oh, yeah.
So I could come here. That was very nice of him. And other than that, yeah, I don't
have
anything.
That's cool. Claire, anybody for you?
Just Jack. We miss you.
Oh, that's
their
very
brother.
Nice.
It's like he won the Nobel Peace Prize. He just gave his acceptance speech.
No,
and I know our intern, our shadowy intern, which I think I called him, Michael.
I'd like to give a shout out to the intern here, Mike Rizzo, too, who he was the one who reached out to me to get me on here. So thanks
that?
A lot, Mike.
Weird coincidence.
Wow. Yeah.
That was a great speech. You didn't steal that from Michelle Obama from last year, did you?
No, that one's original. That one's original.
That speech. Thank you, guys. Keep up the great work.
Hey, thank you for having us on.
Absolutely.
It was awesome. Really glad
Oh, that's so nice of you. A quick break and then more show ahead. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, we were talking to Kevin Mannion and his sister Claire. They're from Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. And I can't think of a better actor to replace your family photos with than Steve Buscemi.
Yeah, all purpose. Wouldn't that be, that'd be the way you'd go at your house, wouldn't it?
I know we would. Was it you or someone I knew who would, you know, you get a frame and there's some stranger in there.
Right.
Was it you that left that picture in your wallet or something?
I have done that in the past. Friends of mine, my friend Todd and his girlfriend did a thing 2 years in a row where when they took their Christmas picture for their Christmas cards, they included my daughters, Reese and Kylie, when they were younger and never explained it. And they had several relatives and friends going, you guys have kids? Like it was such a weird thing to see two little kids in their Christmas picture, and they would not explain it at all. No, it's just in the picture. Why? What's
the
big deal?
Did you charge them for renting out the
girls? No, it's fine.
Rent a kid.
Actually,
you could
start
a business.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah, because there are women that, you know, when you get older, you get grandparents and aunts, like, when are you going to meet that special someone and settle down and have kids? It would be great for
Quiets
women.
Quiets them off.
Yeah.
Right. Here's the kids you've been asking about. Are they yours? Nope. Just in the picture.
Your kids are too old now, though.
Yeah, now they're too old.
Maybe when you're a grandparent.
I got to talk my wife into more kids.
Yeah, that'll go over well.
Mm-hmm.
15 smartest U.S. presidents of all time. Shall we fly through them real quickly?
I'm trying to think of who the smartest would be of all time. Probably Chester A. Arthur.
I'm going from 15
to
up,
1.
All right,
go on. Casey's countdown.
Thank you very much. Let me make sure I'm right. Oh, wait. No, this is. Yes. Franklin Pierce is the 15th smartest president.
Yeah.
He was the 14th president, served between 1853 and 1857. This was before IQ tests, but they're estimating that he had an IQ of about 141.
That's pretty good.
You want
your president to be at least that smart, don't you?
Yeah, I don't. Do you know offhand? And please be honest with me. I know you're ambidextrous and everything.
I am, yes.
But now, do you know your IQ? Because there's no way I don't know my IQ.
I don't know what it is. I've never had it measured.
I don't think I have. When do you get your IQ measured?
When you go in for a suit.
See, that's. I'm sure you're
above
141.
I want my inseam and my IQ measured. Yeah. And if they're the same, I'm in trouble. Someone's in trouble. I don't know who.
All right. 14 of the smartest U.S. presidents of all time. John Tyler. He was the 10th U.S. president after his predecessor William Henry Harrison died in April of 1841. Tyler attended the College of William and Mary, studied law. He had an estimated IQ of 142.
That's pretty good.
Even though that he had an IQ of 142, his peers often didn't take him seriously because he was the first vice president to become president without having been elected.
Oh, that's right.
So they questioned his smarts.
Name the other one. Can you name the other president that was president without ever being elected?
Nope.
Gerald Ford.
Hmm.
Yep.
I bet your
IQ is getting bigger by the moment, isn't it?
Millard Fillmore, you mentioned this.
I told you Millard Fillmore would be in there.
He was the 13th president and the last of the Whig Party.
Yep.
The last Whig president.
He had rainbow wig. He was the only president to wear a rainbow wig.
I was going to go Kristen wig, but, you know.
People didn't think he was that smart because of his multicolored hair, but he was very smart.
He had an IQ of 143.
Whoa.
He became a lawyer in 1823 and was elected to the House of Representatives soon thereafter. When Zachary Taylor died, Fillmore was thrust into the presidency.
Yeah.
Number 12, and we're talking the 15 smartest U.S. presidents of all time, Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Sure.
He was the nation's 32nd president, an estimated IQ of 146. He attended Harvard and Columbia Law School.
Mm-hmm.
And he was diagnosed with polio in 1921, but that didn't stop him from winning the presidency in 1932.
He just seemed smart. You've seen footage of him, right? He just seemed really smart. He would never say stuff like LOL or anything like that.
No, he wouldn't. Abraham Lincoln was the 11th smartest, although he was the 16th president. The son of a Kentucky frontiersman, Lincoln worked on a farm and split rails for fences while teaching himself to read mm-hmm. and write. He had an IQ of 148.
That's why he had such a big hat. That's the only way he could contain his large IQ.
And was the only president to have a patent after inventing a device to free steamboats that ran aground.
Was
did
that Abe Lincoln
that?
Who did that? I didn't know that.
Uh-huh.
I know that was a big problem at the time.
Did you guess Chester A. Arthur?
Yeah.
I think you did.
He's
on this
there.
List,
I
too.
Knew he would be.
He's number 10.
I would have put him number 5 or 6.
He had an IQ of 148. Now, again, this is some of these are before IQ tests, so they...
So they're estimating.
Yes,
kinda.
They're estimating. There was a study and a formula they used to do it. Arthur graduated from Union College in 1848, practiced law in New York City before being elected vice president, and then he assumed presidency a little over a year later.
He was stylish, too, Chester A. Arthur.
Really?
Sometimes I like to dress, like when I'm picking out my outfit for the day, I go, what would Chester A. Arthur wear?
James Garfield, number 9 in the top 10 presidents. He was the 20th president, an IQ of 148.
Not bad.
Number 8 is Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah.
Or do you say Roosevelt? He
Go
had an estimated IQ, I do too, of 149.
He invented the teddy bear.
Well, it was named after him.
Yeah.
He didn't technically
He worked on
invent
it in his lab, in his teddy bear lab.
Number 7, Woodrow Wilson had an estimated IQ of 152.
Wow.
Now we start getting into the presidents we're aware of. Jimmy Carter.
Was he up there?
James Earl Jimmy Carter Jr. served as the 39th president, and he got a Nobel Peace Prize in 2002 for his work in advancing human rights around the world. He has an IQ of 153.
Wow. So combined IQ between Jimmy and Billy is like 156.
You're good with math. James Madison, number 5, hailed as one of the fathers of the Constitution. James Madison had an IQ of 155.
Do any of these presidents weigh the exact same amount as their IQ? That would be cool.
That would be cool. Number 4, let's just finish these off real quickly. Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton, number 4, the 4th smartest president we've had to date.
Do you believe that?
Yeah.
I think he's really smart.
He seems very smart.
An IQ of 156, graduated from Georgetown, won a Rhodes Scholarship to Oxford, law degree from Yale in 73, governor of Arkansas, then president.
Yep.
Number 3, John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
He had an IQ of 158. He went to Harvard in 1940, joined the Navy. He suffered grave injuries while serving in World War II, elected president in 1960.
I've noticed some of our more amorous presidents are also some of our most smart presidents. Have you noticed that?
Yes.
And I didn't say horny out of respect for the office. I was going to say horny, but I'll go with amorous.
15 smartest U.S. presidents of all time. Thomas Jefferson was an American founding father, served as the country's 3rd president. He had an IQ of 160, according to the
That's
estimates.
That's very high.
And number 1, the smartest president we have ever had thus far is John Adams.
Is he really?
Mm-hmm.
What was his IQ?
They
estimated?
Didn't give it.
They don't give it?
So the person
Couldn't
who wrote this
it.
Article
wow.
was not very smart.
That ended
we,
with anticlimactic.
I know. I'm sorry. It has to be above 160.
Yeah,
because
did they
Adams.
Do a Trump Hillary preview?
It doesn't say that one, Kim. I was wondering the same.
No, but I'm going to look that up and get the statistics.
Yeah,
for
let's
you.
See where they are. All right, a break and then some news. Kim has the news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Kim. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Bill is back from vacation. And I know we've all seen the signs. See orange, slow down, save lives. You shouldn't be talking on a cell phone in a construction zone. You should be abiding by the posted speed limit, which is always reduced. And on the line with us right now is the Secretary of IDOT, Illinois Department of Transportation, Randy Blankenhorn. Hi, Randy.
Hi, how are you today?
We're doing well, and it is very important with, what do they say about Chicago? There are two seasons. What is it?
Winter and construction.
That's
yep,
what it
that's
is.
That's it. You've heard this once before, Randy, have you?
I have. And, you know, Wendy, I have to say, you did my whole presentation for me, talking right up front about how we have to pay attention, now we have to slow down. We are in construction season, and we want to make sure that people are safe out there.
And, I mean, even if there aren't people working, because a lot of people complain about it. Oh, these, you know, horses are up and we're seeing construction sites and nobody's working. It's a plan in motion, and it still applies even when there aren't working people there?
It does. And honestly, it's to protect the motorists more as much as it is to protect our workers. Obviously, we care about our workers, but 90%, almost all of our fatalities in work zones are motorists. And it's because people sometimes don't see a work zone, they don't slow down, the car ahead of them has, and so it's really for their safety as much as it is the workers.
And we're in construction season now, but honestly, construction season goes into the colder fall and winter months too sometimes, doesn't it, Randy?
Absolutely. We have construction season that'll last as long as it's warm enough to work, so always almost into November. Last year we were able to work into December. So construction season seems to last longer. Ultimately, that makes the zone shorter in time, and we get things done faster. But it means it's not just a July and August activity you've got to be paying attention to.
Randy, as you know, there have been some problems with the budget or lack of budget here in Illinois. How does this affect IDOT? Does it change things a little bit when it comes to road construction?
You know, it really didn't very much for us on the construction side of it. In last year's budget, the General Assembly did pass and the governor approved our annual construction budget. This new budget that the temporary budget that they have gets us through this next construction season as well. So that side of it has been okay. When we were a little afraid of not having a budget, there was some concern about what might happen. But once that passed, we're pretty much back on schedule.
All right, good.
Randy, I hate to put you on the spot, but everybody says, you know, runways don't get potholes, and why don't we make our streets out of the material that they use on runways? Runways do get potholes, and, I mean, what can we do about potholes? They happen with the extreme temperature changes. Is that what contributes?
It is. And, you know, if you think about when a runway is constructed, I mean, when we did the expressways, the basic structures lasted 40 and 50 years. Our expressways are that old, and so it's just a problem of if we were in North Dakota, it freezes and it stays frozen. Here it freezes and it thaws, and it freezes and it thaws, and that's just plays havoc with the materials that in our roadways.
That makes total sense. Any tips or reminders for people out there when they're approaching a construction zone?
Well, one thing that I will say is that we have put, for the third year in a row, these speed indicator boards out there that show how fast you're going. Pay attention. And I actually notice as I drive around the state, people see those and they do slow down because they're just not thinking about it. So, number one, pay attention. Number two, slow down. Number three, be careful out there.
There have been postings on several of the highways in and around Illinois, Randy, that announce the number of fatalities on the roadways. And even though that's a grim thing to see when you're driving on Mother's Day or Father's Day or any day, it's very effective because you realize how fast something can happen. I don't know whose idea it was to do that. I was kind of against it when it started, but I can see where it makes good sense.
Yeah, it's just another way of reminding people that we have way too many fatalities on our roadway. We are up a little bit again this year. And all of these, many of these are completely avoidable. Almost all of our work zone fatalities are avoidable if people are paying attention. Everyone that gets in a fatal accident, that's a mother, a brother, a son that's not coming home.
Yeah.
And we've got to be able to do a better job of keeping our people safe out on our roadways.
And I did notice, too, that very recently there's been, instead of the number of lives lost, it says don't play Pokemon Go while driving.
Does it say that?
Yeah. Whose idea
that's
was
smart.
That?
Yeah,
that's good.
That's our crack communications team that thought we should let people know that playing Pokemon while they're driving isn't a good idea, just like not doing other things. But, you know, it's just the phenomenon of that coming up so quickly, and people got wrapped up in the game, and they quit paying attention, and we've got to avoid that.
We have to be careful out there. If you see orange, slow down, save lives. I mean, really, you don't want to hit anyone either. So just be careful and pay attention. Randy Blankenhorn, Secretary of IDOT, we thank you for helping to keep the roads as safe as possible.
Thanks, Bill and Wendy. I appreciate it.
Take care, Randy. Absolutely. Randy Blankenhorn again with IDOT. We'll take a quick break and come back with more show. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Set free by the Teen Angels from his prehistoric block of glacier ice comes the world's first superhero, Captain Caveman. Now the constant companion to the Teen Angels.
I remember Captain Caveman.
Captain Caveman.
Cavey? Did they call him Cavey?
Sometimes they called him Cavey if they were in a hurry, yeah. Well, I've got a story, Wendy, about a real-life Captain Caveman. Pedro Luca has lived in a cave, the same cave, in northern Argentina for 40 years. The 79-year-old survivor...
Survivor?
Let me read that again. The 79-year-old survives without running water or electricity. You know why? Because it's a cave. In his cavern high in a mountain in northern Tucumán province. That sounds like a spice.
You should make spice. A geography teacher. I would love to hear you talk about all the various places.
I teach a geography class at the Discovery Zone. When he gets hungry, he picks up his rifle and he goes, "No, that's no.
Yes, he should have a club.
He should have a that would be
a
better.
Cavemen did not have rifles.
No, cavemen, as it turns out, had clubs. They did not have rifles.
And I don't mean like a bridge club or bunko.
No, he should have a club. Maybe he just wants a club sandwich. He picks up his rifle and he goes hunting, or he heads on a 3-hour trek down the mountain to the nearest settlement in San Pedro de Calalo.
That's the geography class. Does he steal from them then?
No.
Demands things at gunpoint?
There's honor among cave people, Wendy. You don't just steal things. That's bad. Bad cave etiquette. A creek, as it turns out, is his main source of water, which I think everyone had guessed. He didn't get it. Like Hinckley and Schmidt doesn't bring him a big thing of water in his cave.
Could you see them pulling up that truck, backing it up to the cave? Beep.
Hello,
beep,
Pedro Luca. Beep. Here's your cave water. Pedro says that it is the richest, purest water there is, the water in his creek.
From the land of sky blue water.
Waters. Who are his cavemates, you might be asking?
Who are his cavemates?
It's funny you ask. 11 roosters and 2 goats that roam the mountainside during the day, but return at night looking for shelter from pumas, and other predators. The crew of roosters wake him up at 3 a.m. every morning, and he begins his day by starting a fire.
That's his alarm clock.
Right. And if he wants to hit the snooze alarm, he burns his hand. He goes to hit snooze, and he goes, cave
hot.
Talk for hot, yes.
Fire.
Fire is magical, he says.
How would he say it? What would he
fire
say?
Fire is magical. Luca, who does not live on the second floor, you would think he would. He does not.
He does. I thought he lived on the second level of the mountain.
It's hard to judge in a cave, you know, because there's higher areas and lower areas. But Luca.
It's good to have you back. Can I just say
that? Oh, yeah. Luca has become a legend in San Pedro de Calalo, where they call him an idiot. Why would he live in a cave for 40 years? They wonder out loud. The town dwellers often give him. I just picture him with a real estate agent going, "I need a cave, not too big, not too small. I don't want to, you know."
No need for running water. I've got a creek down the way.
The creek has the richest, purest water there is. The town dwellers give him food and supplies. It says he buys candles, because that's romantic.
For the goats and the roosters.
Right, right. Some of these roosters are crazy. He buys candles, yeast.
To make bread?
I guess, I hope. And corn with a government old pension, which is worth between $100 and $200. He collects this at the town's post office. So if you send him mail, do you just put cave guy? What do you put on the mail if you're trying to send him a letter at the post office?
That's
Captain
a great
Caveman. His only technological gadget
is an iPhone.
Is it? No, but you're not far off. Is a small battery operated radio.
Maybe
so that
he's
he can
listening.
Listen to the Wintrust Business Lunch. He loves Suzanne Mutian, it says here, Wendy. He has a hard time tuning into stations because the signal is weak in the mountains.
Well, of course.
Yeah, it's the mountains.
You have to go tell it on the mountain.
Yeah, come on. He walks 3 hours every day, does Pedro Luca, climbing the steep mountainside to reach his cave. Do they not have condos in this part of the world?
I don't know.
They must have condos.
Yeah, but he doesn't have to pay anybody rent.
Oh, that's true. There's no rent in a cave. That is true. Luca's skin is weather-beaten. No moisturizer in the cave. He can't get Noxzema. That was his wife's name.
All right, but that you're such a guy that cleans your face. It doesn't moisturize.
It doesn't
moisturize,
right. I was using Noxzema incorrectly. Luca's skin is weather-beaten, and he has few teeth left. But he doesn't. What does he care? There's goats and roosters looking at him.
Is that line actually in there?
Yeah.
He has few teeth left?
It says it right there, Kevin.
It's like they're poking fun at him.
Well, no. He doesn't go to a dentist, so right. Of course your teeth fall out.
Right.
If you don't brush them.
That's true. He doesn't floss either, I bet. It doesn't say, but that's... I'm just making a generalization.
Yes, he grabs vines from the
right,
trees.
Right.
Flosses through
his tooth. He ties one end of the floss to one goat and the other end to the other goat, and he just puts his mouth in the middle.
You need to go back on vacation.
I need a vacation.
Or you're still on it.
I am still on it. All right. It says he seems much younger than a man who is almost 80. So they bashed him. They said his skin is weather-beaten and he's only got a few teeth, but he looks fantastic for a guy who's almost 80. That's weird. Luca says he always wanted to live in isolation. Well, jackpot. Even as a boy, he was raised by his grandfather in San Pedro de Calelo, a town you often make fun of me for saying, but that's what it's called, which he first left at the age of 14 to travel to northern Argentina to earn a living transporting coal to Bolivia.
And so didn't he probably work in a cave? Digging for coal?
I would imagine, well, a coal mine, so
which
similar,
very
similar.
Cave-like.
Yeah, the cave must seem like he's on the Riviera compared to being in a coal mine.
Cave, sweet cave.
Caves, I bet he probably knitted that. It's probably in his in a frame. He returned to the area and to the cave. Word of his solitary lifestyle spread, and he now gets occasional visits from tourists and school children. That'd be weird, wouldn't it?
Look at that guy who's weathered with no teeth.
Right.
Kids, this is what happens when you don't use those red tablets to show you where to brush.
He's being used as a cautionary tale more than anything else. That I think they're making fun of him. Here's what he says. I never asked myself why I chose to live here. There was another cave nearby, but I like this one better. See, even they say beggars can't be choosers, but cave dwellers can be choosers. I think we just learned a valuable lesson.
I think so, too.
Because he had his choice. He's like, well, there's a cave close by, but that cave over there, way cooler.
More rooms?
Yeah, more goats.
Hot tub?
More roosters? I want that cave. I'm spending the extra $0 a month and getting a nicer cave. Sometimes I think I would have liked to have traveled the world and to see Europe, but there's a lot to see in the middle of it all, and you have to have the time to cross that sea. He's very philosophical.
Yeah, but he does have nothing but time.
He's got all kinds of time. Yeah, he's got no plans. He's just living in a cave.
Well, good for him.
Good for him.
We salute him.
So we salute you, Pedro Luca.
Go on.
Candles, yeast, and corn. That's what's on my shopping list. Every week, that's what's on my shopping list. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then the news, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Bill has returned from his vacation, and it's so nice to have you back.
Thank you. It's nice to be back, Wendy. It was one of those vacations. We went to Maine. You know that, but if anyone didn't hear earlier, and it's one of those vacations. We've been to Maine several times, but I'm not saying I could live there, but I could have put in another week or two. You know, like a lot of times when your vacation's over, you go, yeah, I went on a vacation, and now I'm done. But I could
you weren't like, finished.
I could have done another week or 10 days or 2 weeks or 3 months or a year or 3 years. Or the rest of my life. I could have done that. It's really nice there.
I've never been there. And I'm always ready to come home for a vacation because, as we've learned over the years, bad things happen when I vacation.
Bad things do tend to happen to you on vacation. In the first half of our show, in the morning half of our show, we told you a story about Melania Trump. Melania Trump is, of course, the wife of Donald Trump, the Republican candidate for president. She is a former model. She is from the country of Slovenia. And back in her modeling days in 1995, she posed for a pictorial with another woman, another model. These pictures can be seen today in the New York Post, but they're from a magazine called Max Magazine. It's a French magazine that's no longer around. The pictures are, I hope I'm describing them accurately, slightly provocative. Would
slightly.
You agree? All right, they're really provocative. She is without her clothes. The other girl also forgot to put her clothes on.
She didn't forget. You're
and,
so cute.
And they're obviously very friendly with each other. They're comforting each other for some reason.
The headline was Menage a Trump.
Menage a Trump, it said, yeah. So we didn't have time to discuss this with you, the listener, but we were curious as to if something like this still makes an impact. There was a time, as we said earlier, there was a time where if the potential First Lady, I used Harry Truman as an example, if Bess Truman
Harry.
Had... right. If Bess Truman had posed for similar photographs, that would have caused quite an uproar. And other people have been brought down for things far less scandalous than this. But is this even scandalous? She was a model. She was doing her job. She was posing.
Before she even knew Donald Trump.
She didn't even know him yet. It was 3 years before they even met. So is this impactful in any way? Now, several people texted us earlier saying, with all the things that Donald has been involved in, this doesn't even bear mentioning. And it probably,
yeah.
I don't even know if it does. But to me, to see the lady that would potentially be, if things go Donald Trump's way, the first lady of the country, it seems out of character.
It definitely seems out of character, but it's not her fault. I think when she hooked up with Donald Trump, she didn't know in a million years he'd be running for president.
Right, right.
And, I mean, it's not her fault. There was life before Trump.
Right. That's very true. And oh, what's that? We're getting ghost signals
but
from another world.
Phone. Is that your phone buzzing?
No, who'd call me? I don't think anyone would call me.
Melania?
Maybe. It's possible. Here's the story in the New York Post. Here is our nation's would-be first lady, and then right beside her, a second lady. 3 years before she, Melania, met her husband, Donald Trump, Melania Trump was snapped in a nude frolic with another female model. Bombshell photos obtained exclusively by the Post show. The lesbian-themed pictures are from a two-day photo shoot in Manhattan back in 1995, when Melania Knauss, K-N-A-U-S-S, as she was called, was 25 years old and modeling under the name Melania K. Several were featured in Max Magazine, which is a now-defunct French men's monthly, more than 20 years ago, but others have never been in print until now. The raciest of the photos shows Melania lying naked in a bed as Scandinavian model Emma Eriksson, who is also naked, embraces her from behind, just below her breasts, which are fully exposed. And you have seen the pictures, and I have seen the pictures. Now, if it's not Melania Trump, these pictures are just, it's the internet. There's way, way more incredible pictures on the internet, but because it's the potential First Lady of the United States, you go, what?
And why did they come out now?
Well.
I know, but it doesn't have.
Because the New York Post wants to sell copies, so.
I know. But I just don't think it's fair. It's something she did before she even met Donald Trump. It is weird if he wins that she would be the first lady, but he
yeah.
probably loves the fact that people are seeing what she has to offer.
There have been pictures of Ivanka Trump in a bunch of similar magazines. Not
the
totally,
daughter?
Yeah. Not totally without her clothes, but wearing very suggestive clothing. And she's been Donald Trump's daughter forever. But again, I mean, I guess when she took any of these pictures, she wasn't expecting him to run for president.
We all have skeletons in our closet.
Literally.
Don't
we? That's where I keep my skeletons.
I know.
I've got a bunch of skeletons, and that's where I keep them in my skeleton closet.
I have one, and it's in the basement, and we hang it up for Halloween.
I have Red Skeleton in one of my closets.
My God, you should sell tickets.
I know. People should see him.
I just don't think... I don't think it has anything to do with it. I just think it's all in the day of the life of a Donald Trump.
Do you think that this would phase anybody? Is there a single person who's on the fence? First of all, I could separate that question from the rest of the question. Is anybody still on the fence over whose support they're going to go to? But let's say, hypothetically, you were half going, I might vote for Donald Trump. No, you know what? I might vote for Hillary Clinton. You wouldn't be influenced by this, would you? I don't think
no,
so.
Absolutely not. And that's where we didn't have time to discuss it with the listeners, so I kind of want to hear what they have to say before we get out of here.
All right.
Vanessa Williams was the one you mentioned before who was dethroned from Miss America.
Yeah, they found pictures of Vanessa Williams who had just been named Miss America, and they published them in Penthouse Magazine, and it was so scandalous that they had to let her go. I'm trying to remember if they just let her go or if they made her resign.
She had to resign.
They forced her to resign,
I'm pretty
right?
positive, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know, Penthouse is different. This was something that was...
But those pictures, I don't know if you saw them or remember them, are almost identical in theme to these pictures. They're the same kind of... It was her with another girl. They were in black and white. They're actually, in a weird way... I know you're going to go, what are you talking about? They're artfully done, if there is such a thing. It's not straight out porn. There's some art element to it.
It's naked. I mean,
that's what it is.
That's all it is.
Yeah, but it could be. They could have been far more graphic and damaging, and they're not.
No.
You know,
Pat, is this going to sway your decision one way or the other?
No, I. You know what? I watched her speech, and she is a strong. Beautiful, independent woman that she was a model. That's what she did for a living. I think it's a beautiful thing. I think it's there's not,
well, sure, because it's a naked woman. It is a beautiful
no,
too.
I disagree with that. I, it's not smut. This is, you know, she had a very good business. I mean, she was not, you know, she was no slouch. She really ran her business and she knew what she was doing. She was very successful before she met Donald. So I don't see anything wrong with this at all. Everybody has. A business. I don't even agree with the fact that you guys call it a skeleton in your closet. Let me tell you something. If I looked like that, I'd be naked all the time.
I again, this was her job before she even met
Donald
Trump.
Yeah, you can't
so
be surprised.
What, could I change things up a little, Pat? What if she took these photos like a month ago and they came out? Would that?
I think it would be devastating because I think that they would send the complete different message than what she did, where she's at now in her life. I mean, you know, Wendy, you've been in the business a long time. Back in the, you know, the early years, you were a shop jock, you were, you know, disco, you know, everything was great, but you're a different woman now. I think you're a lady, you just carry yourself differently. You shouldn't be, you know, don't be ashamed of your past, be proud of your future.
I like this guy.
That makes sense.
And I do agree with you. What she did before has really no bearing on what's going on right now. It's just weird to know if he's elected and she's the first lady that pretty much everyone's seen her naked.
Yeah.
I do think it's funny you guys are a couple of schoolgirls giggling in the corner. Thank you.
That's what we do, Pat.
Can't deny that.
Thank you, Pat. All right, let's talk to Jill.
Sure.
Jill, what do you think? Hi, Jill.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to say I love your show.
Thank you.
But, I feel a butt coming, see? Butt.
No, not about you. Just with this issue, it is like if you're, you know, I haven't seen these pictures, so it's really nothing about the pictures. But if we're talking about, okay, the potential first lady versus the potential first man,
yeah.
Like, are the Democrats really going to go there? Like, we're going to put Melania versus Bill Clinton and go in, like, all the skeletons there? I just, like... That's a
Jill, I mentioned that earlier, is that if they're criticizing the spouse of the whoever's running the nominee, we kind of know Bill Clinton's history isn't exactly stellar. We get that. There's no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he doesn't look as good naked either as Melania.
No, I don't want to go there. Mm. No, there's hopefully no pictures. That's all my only point.
Well, thanks, Jill.
Thanks, Jill. We appreciate it.
All right, what are your thoughts? Melania Trump had posed years and years ago, 1995, is that the year I said? I want to say 95. Yeah, 95, for a series of pictures that are shown in today's New York Post. They're a little bit on the graphic side. They are artfully done, But what are your thoughts? Does this change anything? Is this a shocker in any way, shape, or form? 312-981-7200. We'll get to your calls and texts in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Melania Trump has a nice fill-in-the-blank.
Oh. You're like the Nipsey Russell of
WGN.
Don't
say Nipsey.
You're like the poet laureate of WGN.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. All right, we were wondering if it's going to make any difference that these photos of Melania Trump prior to her hookup with Donald Trump surfaced today. Is that going to make any difference in anybody's mind?
Uh-huh.
We'll go to the phones. Is this Corlette?
This is Corlette. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What do you think?
It's not going to make any difference to me at all. I was so upset when Obama was running and Michelle Obama said for the first time she was proud of her country. Those are the kind of things that I think are just negative. These pictures of a beautiful woman from the past, I think they're just looking for more dirt on Donald Trump.
Wait, how is Michelle saying she's proud of her country
being negative?
I'm not sure how that's negative.
Because she said for the first time she was proud of her country when her husband either got the nomination or
I remember that.
Won.
Yeah. I think that was a bit of a mistake. I think she said that
wording
wrong.
In it. Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, that really bothered me. But I know that this is not what you're talking about right now, but there's so much dirt on the Clintons that I can't believe anybody would even concentrate on pictures of you know, Trump's wife way back in the past.
Well, there's dirt on all of them. There's no candidate that doesn't have some dirt involved, right? You know that, don't you?
Absolutely. But it's amazing the things we don't hear about regarding the Clintons.
Yeah.
Like Chelsea's father-in-law, nobody ever talks about that. That he was in jail for a Ponzi scheme, nobody ever talks about that.
That's Chelsea's father-in-law?
Yeah,
father-in-law.
Her husband's
and
dead.
Bill Clinton pardoned him, so he got out. But it's just never talked about. So, you know, if there was any dirt like that on Donald Trump, oh, my God, you'd hear about it all the time.
I think Donald can dish his own dirt in a way. He says things that polarizes people. But I'm agreeing with you, Corlette. This has nothing to do with the election at hand, in my opinion.
Well, thank you. And I love listening to the both of you. I think you're wonderful.
Oh, thanks, Corlette. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
I said this earlier. He does seem to be, of all the political candidates I've ever seen, he seems to be the one guy that no matter how much dirt is uncovered, it doesn't have any kind of negative impact on him. If anything, it seems to make him stronger. It goes against all conventional wisdom, but that's the way it keeps looking.
I agree with you. And someone has just texted saying, I'm surprised it took this long for these photos to come out.
I swear I am too. I really thought with her background of being a model that at some point we'd see much more provocative pictures. And until just today, that really hadn't happened.
All right. This is Marianne. Hi, Marianne.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that it wasn't so much what she did in her past, but that Donald was attracted to that is what bothers me. And I would never vote for anybody who had that mindset.
You mean just by virtue of her being a model, you mean, or more than that?
No, the naked pictures and the way she chose to use her body and herself.
I wonder if he was even aware of these until today. Do you think he knew about these pictures? I wonder.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure he has life-size posters.
Maybe
taped to a ceiling.
Right, he does everything bigger than life, so maybe
he does.
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm sure that their wallpaper is very similar to those magazines.
Oh, maybe.
Well, thank you very much for your comment. We appreciate that, Marianne. And this is Melanie on the line. Hi, Melanie.
Hi. How are you? Thanks so much for taking my call. I listen to you guys all the time, and I just think, you know, it's not going to make a difference, but it does to me. And Donald, of course, knew about the pictures. He's proud of those pictures. And it's just a very permissive society. And I've got a daughter, and, you know, I know you guys have kids. And it's like, what are the boundaries? There's just, I don't know, you know, things, no more old-fashioned type of things. It's just to the point where anything goes, and these kids that are coming up in society, they take a look at everybody taking off their clothes, and it's like, it's okay, and it's not. It's not okay, and I just don't feel that this is right for the election.
Melanie, I don't know how old you are, and I don't know if you remember this. Oh, you don't sound that old to me, but do you remember the time?
I'm old. I'm in my 60s.
Oh, man. That's old.
That's not old at all.
It is. All right. So do you remember when there were pictures that were uncovered of Jackie Kennedy Onassis? Some photographer took some pictures of her sunbathing.
Sure. When she was with that
Aristotle Onassis.
Greek Islands. Sure, yeah. I can remember that.
So do you remember what an uproar that was? Now, she had already been first lady, and people were just going bananas because of the impact of these pictures.
Right.
And I know that in other countries, Sarkozy's wife.
Oh, it's very French. Yeah, it's okay over there.
Carla Bruni. And in Italy, there's a woman named Ciccolina who's in the Italian parliament who was a porn star. And everybody knew about that. They had a billion
Sounds
pictures
like a
of
new
her.
Gum. Yeah. Yeah. Ciccolina. Sounds like a new gum.
The Italian gum.
Jump on that. Right?
So
I don't remember her. Tell me more about this Ciccolina.
Well, she made a whole bunch of movies in Italy, adult films, quote unquote, and they loved her in Italy. She's no longer a member of Italian Parliament, but she was for years. So I guess it's just kind of us catching up with the rest of the world, I guess.
Well, I will never catch up with the rest of the world. Vanessa Williams, like Wendy was saying, yes, she was asked to step down. It was the same kind of pictures. I remember it so well, and I got to tell you, my daughter will turn on the TV and there'll be a reality show. She's 27, and she'll say to me, okay, see what's going on? This is why I'm single, and I feel terrible when I see it because it's like, it's just everything has changed, and it should go back to a little bit to having standards, having integrity. It's all respect.
Keep your clothes on.
None of that.
We got to keep our clothes
solid.
On.
Keep your clothes on, everybody.
Exactly.
Thank you, Melanie. Thank you. Solid advice, Wendy. Solid advice. All right, we will take
a quick break.
Right, then you should take your clothes off. Even better advice. All right, a break, and we'll find out what Ro and Anna have next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.